Back in April, Chikoa started teasing their newest project, Chikoa Park. Despite them not revealing any follow-up details at all, I was obviously frothing at the mouth. Over the next few months, information slowly started being unveiled until finally, teaser photos. Oh my god. Chikoa is real. I had to figure out how to go. But to anyone who knows how Japan works, you'd understand this is a much more difficult mission to accomplish than suggested, because practically everything is executed through randomized lotteries. You can't just camp a website and refresh 5 times a second in hopes of being the first to buy all the tickets to resell, like the barbaric ways of the West. You apply alongside 100,000 million people, then pray on your hands and knees to the gacha overlords, knowing you ultimately have no power in this world whatsoever. I lit my manifestation candles and let the overlords choose my fate when I secured tickets. Chikoa, thank you for shining your light down on me. I figured since I'm gonna be flying all the way back to Japan for the park, I might as well spend my time as surrounded by Chikoa as I can. So I ended up turning it into the most jam-packed Chikoa-themed trip I possibly could. Sarah, good friend and fellow Chikoa enjoyer, and I hopped on a plane and sped off to Tokyo to experience possibly the most obsessive yet exciting time of our lives. After landing, sleeping, and waking up bright and early, I was practically buzzing with excitement, knowing today was the day I was going to witness the most anticipated Chikoa event the franchise has created yet. Equipped to live through the most memorable day of my life, we headed off to the park. As we were driving, my head was still buzzing with questions about what the event was even gonna be like. The promotion of the whole thing had been super secretive. I really didn't know what to expect going into it. The car pulled up, and we were greeted by giant Chikoa and friends wrapped around the building. This is how I knew it was gonna be huge. Please prepare yourself. We walked through a very hypnotizing Chikoa portal that opened up to the welcoming first room. You could sit in Raku's car, see Shisa and Ramen Yoroi-san chatting together, and even spot a cheeky little Momonga and Furuhonya. Also, naturally, there is a huge wall of Chikoa hats and headbands for purchase right out the gate, so you could walk around sporting your Chikoa Oshi. I will say they went all out on the character headband selection. Almost every single guy in the series was there, including the random enemies. As someone who tends to like super obscure side characters in series, it warmed my heart. Deeper into the room, you can find a real-life replica of Chikoa's actual home. Please don't disturb them too much, though. They're very busy studying for their reading exam. Good luck, Chikoa. I know you can do it this time, buddy. What was super cool was the specialized little photo booths they had. You and a friend, or if you're a lone wolf Chikoa enjoyer, that's cool too, sit down at one of the logs and are given the option to take a photo with either Chikoa, Hachiware, or Usagi. Whichever character you choose pops out to join your photo with their own personalized animation, which was such a wonderfully cute attention to detail. Sarah and I both freaked out when a shy little Chikoa shuffled its way over to us, and everyone in the room watched as we took photo after photo after photo, squealing at every single one. Walking by, we encountered a helpless Hachiware stuck in a ditch. Besides sitting there with him while he yelled for help, there was unfortunately nothing we could do for this poor fella as we stared at our own pitiful reflections above us. Knowing they recreated and built a part of the manga that made me cry gave me a very strange mixture of bittersweet feelings, but ultimately it was too cute to fully question the morality of it. To continue into the next section, you have to wander your way through the discombobulating mirror maze of the nightmare-inducing elephant. The lights were flashing various colors, the floor and walls were painted all sorts of disorienting patterns, everything was super wiggly, and I may or may not have crashed into a couple mirrors, who's to say. Sarah and I stumbled out of the very humbling maze eventually, but as staff came over and gave us Chikoa-themed 3D glasses, we realized we weren't safe yet, as there were multiple screens of various enemies hacking and slashing and call fat spitting in our direction. You really don't realize how many evil, treacherous creatures there are in the series until you sit in front of every single one as they try to get you. In fact, I'm realizing now a lot of the experiences Chikoa Park puts you through are the evil, messed up, life-threatening parts. True Chikoa fans know the series isn't all sunshine and rainbows like you'd expect looking at it from the outside, but that is the part about Chikoa that I love the most. Even in the most wholesome of lands where there can be giant rivers of miso soup, meadows of plants bearing toasted buns, and friendly neighbors that just want to buy cute pajamas, you can still get hit with 8 whole days being kidnapped, starved, and thrown in goblin jail for eating the wrong stupid-ass mushroom. Such is life. Don't stress too much, though. As you can see, things find a way of working out as the giant cyclops Ode thrashes his way through the goblins at true scale. I really liked this section. After you all nearly escape being eaten by goblins, you're led into the shelter of a nearby temple. Chikoa and Hachiware bear curious looks, innocently wondering what could await them ahead. And as you pull back the curtain of the next room, oh, it's the evil, dark, and twisted snake that curses everyone with eternal yearning for the mines, already amassing an endless hallway of brainwashed civilians. Which masochist on the design team pitched this one? Who was it? No, oh, they even have crystallized Usagi. There's a tried and true hater amongst the Chikoa Park designers. And honestly, they deserve a raise. As you try to hurry your way out of the temple, Hachiware is seen having to unsheathe his tiny claws in self-defense of a guard. Up ahead, Chikoa hides behind a mirror as the snake tries to zap them with his crystallizing gaze. It's implied the beam reflects off the mirror and kills the snake, but they don't specifically show it. Yeah, I suppose we should draw the line at actual death in the silly little Chikoa Park experience. Everyone is busted up and bruised, but finally free to leave the malevolent temple. What lies past these doors? Well, with the craziest luck, we happened to be there as Chikoa and Momonga were out that day to greet people. I almost crumpled to the floor right then and there in front of every single employee. Hi, Momonga. I'm a big fan. Don't listen to what the people are saying about you on the internet. They were so cute and energetic, and they even had Chikoa Park headbands of their own favorite or related characters. Any knowers? After many, many photos with our fave, I don't care if you hate him, you can pry Momonga away from my cold dead fingers. We were led upstairs to the second floor of the park, and as we ascended, my jaw was left behind. The entire second floor of Chikoa Park was completely dedicated to custom, exclusive, never-before-seen Chikoa merchandise. Which, yes, does imply the full story of the walkthrough experience on the first floor is you living peacefully in the world of Chikoa, getting trapped in an inconceivable nightmare maze, somehow escaping only to find yourself being jumped by every violent creature within a 10-mile radius, being thrown in goblin jail, breaking out and running away to a nearby temple, finding yourself surrounded by enslaved creatures controlled against their will to do grueling manual labor for eternity by an evil snake that crystallizes one of your best friends, watching poor anxious Chikoa push to kill in order to release the curse, and everyone escaping within an inch of their lives. I literally could not have written it better myself. That is quite literally the best representation of the series you could possibly present. And as a treat for getting through all of it, you can now spend all of your money. To say it was overwhelming, it is an understatement. There were 5 whole organized areas for shopping and merch. The Chikoa section had big plushies, small plushies, keychain plushies, plushie slap bracelets. The characters came in any size, shape, or form you wanted, and it was very pleasing on the eyes, might I say. Hachiware's area was more centered around decorative items and collectibles. Pens, necklaces, notebooks, tote bags, more keychains of quite literally every character in the series. Household items like plates, glasses, utensils, this really funny soap dispenser based on Chikawa getting a parasite. Over in Usagi's shop, they had apparel, lots of cute shirts, jackets, socks, and literally my favorite item of the entire store, the character backpacks. They're the perfect size, so freaking cute, and you can show off more of your plushies in the front pocket. Yes, I got the Momonga one. You'll have to kill me to silence my truth. Across the floor was a themed area for popcorn, cookies, various other snacks. But the part that stopped Sarah and I in our tracks was this custom keychain maker section. There were so many charm options. Letters, shapes, characters, references. Sarah and I spent like 15 minutes sitting on the floor together trying to figure out what we even wanted to make. There were too many possibilities. This was probably a lot to digest all at once. So to take a little breather, we can play the little carnival games around the corner. Meatball Korogashi is simple. Roll meatballs down the chute to try and get it in the skee ball hole. You get a trial roll, which Sarah and I both sunk, and then three real meatball rolls, which Sarah and I both utterly failed. In the other game, Kimonosu Catcher, you had to fling the butterfly-ified Chikawa, Hachiware, and Usagi into spider webs. Kinda messed up, but look, I'm here to win! I didn't get a single one in the net. I was just trying to keep them safe. Sarah actually got one in and won a giant Chikawa pillow. Questionable morality yet again being presented in this twisted establishment, but God, it's a good pillow. Chikawa Park is such a wonderful celebration of the franchise, and I'm so happy it's been successful enough to earn such a grand building and experience. There are so many little details crafted with love and dedication that any Chikawa fan would appreciate, and the inclusive of all the characters means there's something for fans of any creature. Yes, even that evil goddamn star that I want to splat with a fly swatter. Alright, well, that's, why are you... You're looking at me a little funny. I don't know what you want from... Okay, yes, we got a shit ton of merchandise. Everyone watched as Sarah and I frolicked around the merch floor quite literally like Jaden in a Chikawa shop. It took like 15 minutes for the employees to ring up each of our halls. Everyone was happy for us and encouraged us to get things, but Sarah and I couldn't help but visibly succumb to the shame. With what broken Japanese I knew, I tried to make conversation with the clerk while we waited. Sumimasen. Chikawa daisuki. Hazukashi. If you're wanting to see the Chikawa Park Hall, you're getting a bit ahead of yourself because you might have forgotten we still have more Chikawa locations to go to. There's more. So much more to add to the final haul. Next up was the Chikawa Ramen Shop. The theming of everything was so fun. It was just like a little Japanese ramen spot with all the characters designed to look like they were employees. And even the glasses and bowls were specifically designed to match the atmosphere. Sarah ordered a Momonga soda, which looked like she enjoyed. And I couldn't help myself from ordering a Kurumanju beer. Yes, it was noon. Yes, I don't really like beer. And yes, I get drunk way too easily. But I simply could not pass up the opportunity to have a taste of Kurumanju's iconic favorite beverage. While I very carefully sipped on my breakfast, the staple and only food option of the restaurant arrived. The Chikawa Ramen. Since it has pork in it, I unfortunately chose to abstain. Sarah got to eat it though and said it was delicious, so I believe her on that one too. Also, I think I'm drunk now. Luckily, the next stop was right across from us as we walked directly into the Chikawa Cafe. And thank the Lord because I needed something other than alcohol in my stomach. Sarah and I were fawning over the menu because not only was there more variety, but everything was so cute. Momonga Furuhonya jelly beverage, Chikawa yogurt drink, Hachiware and egg blanket plate, spicy Chikawa curry, Usagi flan, Momonga parfait, interactable Chikawa weeding tiramisu. Look at this menu, you guys! Humanity has peaked! We took turns tasting everything, and it was surprisingly all pretty good. Nothing was bland, none of the desserts were too sweet. I've seen some comments that the curry was a bit too spicy, but honestly, I respect the cafe's commitment to an actually higher higher than average spiciness, especially when it's colored bright red. By the way, the special cafe collectibles were so cute. Everyone had a little cafe uniform on, and oh. Since we'd finished up our meals, we hit up the Chikawa store in the Tokyo Station Character Street, as well as the Chikawa Land shop in Shinjuku, which were both simpler, but still very great for general shopping. We were very meticulous to go through and appreciate every section of every aisle, so even though they can be seen comparatively as just, you know, typical shops, you can imagine we spent lots of time there too. You know, despite us going to so many Chikawa locations, nothing ever felt repetitive. Even with the small little shops, Chikawa is somehow just so incredibly locked in on making great merch. I don't know how in the world they do it. Plus, they're constantly spitting out more and more. I thought getting into Miku was awful for my wallet, but I'm sorry, Chikawa. I didn't clock how much skin you had in the game. Alright, so the next place we were headed to was the one Sarah and I were the most excited for. Obviously, besides the park. The Chikawa Bakery. And it absolutely did not disappoint. The design of the shop was divine. From the colors to the decorative characters, all the way down to the actual baked goods. Oh, it was like nothing we'd seen before. And at this point, we had seen a lot of Chikawa, so you can imagine how much weight that statement has. The treats looked so beautiful inside the display, and there were a ton more options than I was expecting. Everything was, of course, really good. I really liked the matcha momonga croissant, but I thought the kurumanju red bean bun was the funniest little guy because it just looks exactly like him. I have consumed his beer, and now I have consumed him. Admittedly, Sarah and I absolutely lost a lot of control over the bakery's merch. Every few minutes, one of us would be like, no, I can't justify buying this thing even though I really like it. Buy it, you'll statistically never come back here ever again. You're right. This was the perfect day. I woke up, was surrounded by Chikawa for 12 hours straight, and then went to sleep. But I'm sure you want to see the damage. Alright, you've been patient. Witness the spoils of our Chikawa adventures through Chikawa Park, the ramen shop, cafe, bakery, Tokyo Station, and store. I admit it looks pretty extreme, but I have an explanation that's not mental illness. Since I've dragged so many of my friends into the Chikawa rabbit hole alongside me, I wanted to get them all gifts to, in a way, celebrate this experience with them. I was only able to bring Sarah along for this trip, but given the opportunity, there would have been so many more people by my side for it. Just that thought alone hit me a bit hard and made me feel really grateful. I grew up with, at the time, pretty niche and uncommon interests, and for the longest time didn't really know what it was like to actually be able to bond with people over shared fixations. Over time, I made friends that got me into their favorite franchises, but Chikawa felt like the first time I was able to get them into my favorite thing and have them genuinely enjoy it. Watching the people in my life take the time to actually get into the manga or anime, talk to me about their favorite characters, send me Chikawa art or memes they found and wanted to share, it felt really new, and I guess I just didn't realize how special it could be to me. So I wanted to spoil as many friends as I could, and given how insane the haul in the end was, it actually made me digest how many friends were impacted by my general excitement, and how many people I can share a mutual interest with now. Any character you saw in the pile that wasn't Chikawa, and in some cases Momonga, was meant for someone in my life that I got sucked into the franchise alongside me. A symbol of someone who I've spent hours talking to over this little thing, and someone that's made me feel really appreciated for simply taking the time to give my favorite thing a try for the first time. To break up the sappiness, I will mention that as soon as I finished setting up this giant wall of Chikawa merchandise to record that shot, Sarah brought her Japanese aunt and cousin over to our hotel room. So these two wonderful, normal ladies, who did not speak a lick of English, simply walked into Sarah's friend, frantically hunched over a giant hoard of probably the most obsessive and off-putting mound of greed they'd ever seen in their entire lives. Without being able to explain it all. Jugo Tomodachi. ちいかわ友達。恥ずかしい。
Since my last Chikawa video, I've seen more and more people finally get into the series as well, and it makes me so happy. It's a long way out, but I hope that one day America can have even a fraction of a Chikawa park that Japan has built, because it's awesome. Thank you for watching, happy end of the year, and long live Chikawa. Normally I try to talk about games I've played before or at least have heard a bit about, but when AlphaRad came to me and said, Jaden, play Amazing Island. I don't know why, but I decided in that moment, yes, Jacob, my good friend, I trust you. I will play Amazing Island. And let me say, I do not regret it one bit. Let me take you on the journey that is Amazing Island. The game starts by telling you the story of a mysterious picture book about a mysterious island with mysterious amazing creatures that everyone loved. But then everyone suddenly decided it was boring and forgot about it for 1,000 years. Anyway, back to me. Please select your alter ego. Ooh, alright. I decided my alter ego is this little boy. Mainly just because I don't want to be the girl. Little man's over here with Bob the Builder overalls and two whole sweatbands. He means business. So I find the book that everyone decided they didn't care about anymore, read it, go to bed, and suddenly I'm transported into the book world because I am a human and I guess they have low standards. Also, they gave me a complimentary trading card when I arrived. I started looking around when... Oh! Why'd that get me? Hey kid! Time to play evil volleyball! In the volcano! And with that sudden jump scare I wasn't expecting, I summoned the creature from the trading card, spiked evil guy into the lava with a ball that I think might be the sun, got a vision orb, and Skullman, whose actual name sounds very kind of offensive, is unpossessed and saved. The town elder is like, great job! Get 7 more orbs. And I was like, yes, because I'm an 11-year-old boy stuck on a possibly not real island with monsters and little tiki torch people. So to get the vision orbs, you have to play a series of little mini-games followed by a boss battle. I can't do the mini-games on my own, I guess, so I go to this mirror room and the little guy here is like, your dreams and imagination will materialize to form your partner and turn it into a reality. I will look into the depths of your soul and retrieve the being that is within you. Question 1. What's your star sign? 1 deep dive into my creative subconscious later, and my monster is... I see. So that's what's been floating around in my brain this whole time. His name is Nathans, with an S. Nathans and I merge and fly off to the first minigame trial, which begins with a simple foot race. Oh my... Look at... Holy crap! Look at him go! Oh... Okay, there we go. So that was an emotional roller coaster. Anyway, on to the next game, which is called Water Skip Slider. And oh my god, this game destroyed me. You've gotta mash A, jump off the ramp, and flick the joystick at the right time to skip across the water. But for some reason, I just didn't understand the timing. Oh, I think that was too early. Go. No. Go. No. Go. No. No. I failed the game 6 times until I decided to give in and roid Nathan's up with a stamina potion. And then I lost again. It took 8 attempts to beat that game once. And I really can't give you a good reason why I'm so horrible at it. But dear lord, do I hope I never have to play that game again. Anyway, we're back on track. We won Beyblades, Attack Large Tower, and finally reached Evil Volleyball again. And what do? I flubbed it. I lost, like, immediately. Now. No. Now. No. Now. No. Okay. Alright. I have to replay all those mini-games again. Skipping some content. Hey, look, we got the orange vision orb. What new power do I unlock with this shiny new vision orb? I already have this ability, actually. So, since I can create my own monsters now, I decided to create 1 monster per trial. Introducing Hayabusa, humanoid jellybean who is withering away mentally and physically. He may be 1 windy day away from becoming dust, but you know what he's good at? Playing basketball. Just kidding, he failed, he sucks. His actual skill is matching big heavy metal heads. Ah, he failed that one too. Well, at least he can punch the most amount of little demons. Oh, he failed that one too? Oh, ha, check it out. Green Vision Orb, good job, buddy. Really proud of you. Please stop being sad and pathetic. Back to the monster birthing mirror, and out pops my pride and joy, Creamer. Creamer's the top dog. He's everything Hayabusa wanted to be and more. Look at him go, a basketball pro. Next minigame is... No, not water skip slider. Are you kidding me? So they make you play water skip slider again, but this time on top of the previous mechanics, there's giant pillars of rock you need to destroy while you're still trying to skip on the water. Anyway, so I failed it 3 times in a row. The stars aligned, and I was on to catapult craze. Ooh, perfect. Alright. Do I click? Okay, there it goes. Oh. Alright, whoa, there's like 4 different bird cameras there. Look at him go! Creamer! Oh no, he's not gonna make it. No! Creamer! No! Well, now I've lost all my lives. I'd like to mention that Jacob and I were in a call for all of this because he wanted to watch me play Amazing Island. And at this point of the game, he was muted because he was on the phone taking a business call, but was still watching the screen share. So we were both sitting there in silence, watching me slowly deteriorate as I lose to Water Skip Crusher literally 6 times in a row. Let's skip to the end. This is getting painful. Yellow Vision Orb! Woohoo! In comes Wagner, the innocent little robot dog with one eye. Competitive Beyblade, stacking tower blocks, racing. He sounded in pain during the whole thing. I also wanted to mention with the Beyblade game, you get points when you're blasted into the air by the volcano, but turns out if you fall off the edge, the game also thinks you're in the air. Like, in a good way, and gives you points. So needless to say, I started exploiting the hell out of that mechanic. Blue Vision Orb! Now, I don't think you're ready for the next monster I created, but I will present him anyway. Behold, Scoliosis, the giant saw blade shrimp. Saw blades for arms, saw blades for scales, machine gun in the middle of his chest. You don't know how badly I wanted to put it somewhere else, but this channel is rated E for everyone, so it took all my willpower to refrain myself. Now when I'm entering a minigame, the intro text looks like a diagnosis. Nothing really out of the ordinary happened with Scoliosis, but with one of the minigames, I completely forgot I had to read the instructions and ended up not knowing what to do at all. And I just thought this clip was really funny. Help! I don't know what I'm doing! I thought I was supposed to match it like the other ones. I'm not getting... Oh, great. What's my score? After a lot of trial and error, Scoliosis got the Water Vision Orb. I don't know if they started, like, running out of color ideas for the Vision Orbs or something. All of the orbs so far have been, like, the Orange Orb, the Blue Orb, the Green Orb, the Yellow Orb, Water Orb. I unlocked the monster body type Kid, so I decided to make a child. His name is Child. Holy crap, Child is buff as shit! Hello, this is Max. He has many swords, and here's all. By the way, this game has thrown like 4 different versions of Water Skip Slider at me throughout this whole playthrough, and I'm still not getting any better at them in the slightest. Look at Max go, full on sprinting with those swords like there's not a care in the world. Come on, don't do this to me. We're so close. Don't! Ah! So now that I've got all the vision orbs, it's time to fight... The Black Evil. That's the game's actual name for the final boss. Please don't come after me for saying this. It's not under my control. But I've got one last thing I want to do. I wanted to combine all the monsters we've created so far and use that monster to fight the final boss. Nathan's eyes and wings, Hayabusa's arms, Creamer's tail, Wagner's little cognose thing, Scoliosis' saw blades, Max's legs and swords, Child's happy face t-shirt. They all merge into my other half. This is animations! You get it? We enter the volcano willingly this time, and there he is. Black Evil. Again, the game said it, not me. I don't know why, but the game developers decided to crank the difficulty on this fight to hard as they possibly could. It's another version of Evil Volleyball, by the way. If you expected anything else, I don't know what to tell you. He throws this astronomical freaking burning star at you, and you have to press A at the right time to catch it. Wait until the very end of the cliff to throw it back, otherwise you'll lose your platforms and fall off. And also click at the right time to throw it far enough to hit him. I know, a bit confusing. And it's not actually easier to play. Alright, you're going down, dude. Watch this. Big throw. Big throw. Alright. This one. Big throw. Whew. Okay. Ooh, I don't know about this one. Final blow! Alright. Animations. Hold on. Yeah. So here, if you catch the sun at just the right time, you actually don't slide back and can immediately throw it at him, which is really good, but I think it's something like a frame-perfect maneuver, so... Ugh. Crap. Ooh! Is this it? Oh! Look at that health! No! Please! Yeah. But then... Oh, come on! Come on! Yes! Is he dead? Ah! I'll be honest, I completely forgot there was supposed to be a phase 2. The tutorial totally told me about it, but I was failing for so long it just completely left my memory. I was freaking out because I wasn't mentally prepared and also didn't know what to do, so Jacob was trying to coach me in real time amidst the panic. It was not good, but somehow I did it. Dude, I don't even know what's happening. I can't even see, like, what is... I won. Black Evil was defeated, and Amazing Island is saved. There was a bunch of dialogue and plot afterwards, but I didn't really read any of it because I just watched animations do various little dances in celebration in the background. So, Amazing Island. I think this one sentence I said after the game was done really summarized it all up really nicely. This game feels... too good for what it is. Almost every single minigame played really well, and the controls were never really a problem. Sure, I failed an embarrassingly large amount of times, but I'm pretty sure that's just because I'm incompetent. The music they created for the minigames actually, like, goes hard. Basically, I can't really point to any specific aspect of the game and say, yeah, that wasn't good. And something about that scares me, especially for a game that looks like this. I will cherish my creations and the memories I made in this game for as long as I live. Especially Creamer. I really like Creamer a lot, and I have no idea why. Anyway, my final thoughts. I think more people need to know about Amazing Island, so, I don't know, go play it. So, if you didn't know or have forgotten, there was a pandemic, and not only that, but said pandemic ended up canceling the super awesome tour Scribble Showdown James, Dom, Ross, Aaron, and I were planning on doing last year. But the good news is, it's officially postponed. We have new dates, tickets are on sale now. If you already bought tickets from 2020, those are all still valid points of purchase, you don't have to buy them again. I think DC and London are still trying to get all straightened out, but yeah, all the other places are good to go. You can go to scribbleshowdown.com to get tickets, I put the link in the description, and yeah, I'm talking about this a bit early, but I figured I'd let you guys know before we started going crazy with the promo, so you've got a bit of a head start. Anyway, thanks for watching the video. Amazing Island is cool. Hi everyone, it's Jaden. This is another video with Nathan from Drawfee.
Hi!
Woo! You haven't seen him on my channel yet, but we're doing videos anyway.
What an introduction.
So what we're gonna do is draw Yu-Gi-Oh! Characters. I don't know anything about Yu-Gi-Oh! Nathan said that he knew a little bit, so hopefully we won't butcher them too much. I have this list of some characters, and we don't know what they look like, we just have the names. We'll get revealed what they look like after we draw. So this is just gonna be a train wreck. Should we get started?
I'm excited. Let's do it.
So your monster guy is Kuribo. Kuribo.
Kuribo. I kind of... Yeah. What I remember is Kuribo is sort of just like a big fluff ball.
Like, I've walked into friends watching Yu-Gi-Oh! Before.
And they're always like, no, it was just...
They were saying that there's like some annoying monsters. Was this one of the like annoying guys? Because they don't seem like a monster. They just seem like a little flea. Like, I'm a Pokemon person.
Oh, same,
so,
yeah.
To me, it just looks like Venomoth.
You know, I might have just drawn Venomoth. This is my version. This is my Karibo OC. Karibo OC.
Do not steal. He looks like he was born in the cold snow, but he wants to move to the city and pursue like a bakery.
Maybe this Karibo is, he's a baker, so he's got a chef's hat. He doesn't want to be a dual monster.
He wants to be a pastry guy.
He wants to make those little cupcakes.
So I'm gonna reveal a clue that I have been provided.
Oh, okay.
This monster looks cute, but has the power to multiply infinitely.
Oh.
He doesn't need any employees. He just needs himself.
Right. So we've got Karibo Prime over here.
Oh, there we go.
They don't all get to wear the chef's hat.
I mean, working in the culinary industry, they've got to have some crazy hair nets.
Oh, yeah. You have to sign a waiver to not be mad if there's hair in your cupcakes.
You can't sue them. Since they're deadly monsters, I wonder if their hair is poison.
Oh, maybe. That'd be bad for business.
It's like an assassination bakery.
Oh, yeah. Bring your targets there.
Yeah, you have the option. You can get a normal cupcake or an assassination cupcake.
It is called assassination cupcake, so it's...
It's on the menu. It's highlighted red.
There's no way to stop all that hair.
Man, the janitor's probably got either a good wage or a bad life.
I would not want to clone myself to be an employee because I know how lazy I am. I wouldn't even be able to get mad at myself. I'd be like, you knew what you were getting into.
And you're like, yeah.
Yeah.
Look at all these cupcake mans.
This one's doing a jump.
He's like this sign twirler outside.
Oh, yeah. Come on. Get assassinated.
Yay.
Assassination cupcakes.
It's high demand, unfortunately. I don't know what they look like anyway, so I'm just like, yeah, you nailed it. Oh, that's actually really close.
Yeah, I got pretty close. He's got very sharp claws, and he's got little Pac-Man eyes.
I mean, your cupcake mans probably filed themselves down so they don't stab any cupcakes.
As you've already established, you don't know any Yu-Gi-Oh! Monsters.
Yep, I know nothing.
Miscellaneousaurus.
Miscellaneousaurus, that's... Well, he's got, of course, we gotta go with the long neck guy. But the he has scissors as a head. Because those are random, right? How do scissors work? Shoot. Vertically. Nope. There we go.
Yeah! So this is the face. You've set off on a very good path already. Oh, they're the eyes!
There we go.
If I saw this coming towards me. Oh my god.
Obviously, we're on the right path.
I just read what the first clue was, and it's very good. Just mix a bunch of dinosaurs together.
Oh, okay. It's like those three-headed dinosaurs, and they're like, there's that one brother that just you deal with.
So there's actual dinosaur face, and then there's also scissor face. They don't get along. You know, I just want to be able to enjoy some construction paper without having you snip it.
He's like trying to sleep, and then he just wakes up to snip, 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 and he's like, what are you doing?
I was giving you a haircut.
Yeah, he does have like really bad haircuts.
I was just trying something out. I saw it on the internet. It looked like a cool style.
He's like, I don't want sideburns. How do you even do that? You cut hair.
Well, I had to glue the hair on you first so I could cut it.
So he's got a hammer tail, and he's got a pencil leg.
Which head controls the pencil leg? Do they share custody, or is it...
The scissor guy connects to the pencil, and this guy connects to this foot. They have to teamwork together. It's ultimately a brotherly love kind of relationship.
That's nice.
This guy's got a spatula.
Spatula, sure. We're cooking breakfast. That's like when they get in a fight, but then Scissorhead feels bad, so he cooks his brother breakfast in bed.
But he gets like, it's all cut into tiny pieces. What can we do for wings?
Maybe that's the construction paper. It's been cut up. He cut his own wings on
and
there.
And then the other one's just like snippy. No, it's one of those paper guys. I couldn't find another place for his paper guy wings. So
it replaced them. That's good. It's an upgrade. You know, they don't fly real good, but they're mostly for show.
And then like he leaves a little trail of nails.
Oh, that's got to be painful coming out.
No, his tail thing, he hammers things.
Okay, because when you said he leaves a trail, I was my mind went to. Oh, okay, good. They're from his pocket. That's much better than what I was thinking.
Either way, it's probably both. I don't know, Yu-Gi-Oh. Gross. They probably explain it in the anime.
Yeah, this is. Oh my.
Oh.
Fucking head.
I mean,
with
I
the
got
hammer.
The head right. One of the heads right. That must be like his dad or something.
You two better get along. I will turn this card around.
So how hungry are you?
It is. I'm sort of bleeding into my lunchtime right now.
How about a hungry burger?
How about a... That's not the monster's name, is it?
Oh, yes, it is.
Yu-Gi-Oh!
People complain that Pokemon is unoriginal.
Hungry Burger. I know there's a Yu-Gi-Oh monster named, like, Mystic Tomato.
Mystic?
So...
Oh, they're the perfect pair. Unless your enemy doesn't like tomato on their burger.
I do not like tomato, personally.
So that, like, minus 1,000 life points for you.
Maybe this burger's got teeth. What goes on a burger? Some pickles?
Pickles. I think of that SpongeBob episode with that one big flounder fish. He's like, you forgot the pickles. And SpongeBob's like, it's under your tongue. And everyone's like, oh!
What a reveal.
I'm not talking about at all.
I mean, that's not, I know SpongeBob works at a fast food burger restaurant. What should the eyes be?
Sesame seeds.
Sesame seeds.
What if he has like 1,000 sesame eyes?
Oh my god, that's terrifying. Okay. Oh, and maybe he's got like french fry legs.
Oh my god.
Oh, this burger's so hungry.
How ironic would it be if he was a vegetarian?
Oh, he's got all these sharp teeth, but he's just like, I just want lettuce. If he ever becomes satisfied, he'll cease being hungry. Burger. He'll just be regular burger.
And then
you know?
No one can play with his card because he'll be powerless. I'm going to give you a clue. A small Japanese flag can be seen on the top of this creature's bun.
Got
so
it.
So he's like a little Japanese boy.
Yes, because all little Japanese boys have... flags.
Do you think they have like a little cocoon for their little babies?
Oh, little sliders.
Oh, that's adorable.
Slider spiders.
It's Spindle's little condiments, so like mustard and ketchup and stuff. This looks great. I don't even want to look at the actual guy.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy with how this turned out. Wow.
Oh my god, that's like pretty spot on.
Yeah, I think I innovated on it.
That's puberty stage for your hungry burger.
I've got a Yu-Gi-Oh monster for you.
Yay.
Zork Necrophades, aka Zork the Dark One.
I don't know what a Zork is.
Would you like a clue to start off with?
Yeah, let's do that.
Clue one says, large, purple-skinned demon with bat-like wings. This is a pretty big villain in Yu-Gi-Oh, and he is jacked!
He's jacked! He's a demon, so that makes me think he is a dragon. If he's jacked, he definitely went to the gym.
Oh, there we go. Yes. Jaden, yes.
I don't know anatomy, so I'll try my best. What do dragon nipples look like?
Maybe just horns? Aww.
He said bat wings.
Yeah, bat wings.
Remember that description. He skipped wing day.
Again, there. He skipped wing day. He's gonna get made fun of on all the demon lifting forums.
I don't know how tail muscles work, but... It's
oh, yeah. It does yeah, not skip like, tail day.
You know how bros are with their protein shakes.
Oh, do I ever. They should call them protein shakes, am I right? I skipped ahead in the clues. You can't see this in the card, but he has a dragon head coming out of his stomach.
Oh, that takes away the abs.
Aw, he's cute. Oh, but he's also lifting.
You can't skip
stomach head day.
He doesn't skip wing day. I don't even know what beefy, muscly wings look like, so
you got it.
Imagine.
It's that. If the big one's name is Zork, the little one's name could be, like, Zerk.
Zork and Zerk?
And they're buddies. They get along way better than the two heads on Miscellaneosaurus. Like,
I wish I gave him was a tank top.
Maybe just a real tiny one. Yeah. And it just... Yeah!
It's so
small. His mom got it for him.
It's obviously ripping.
Oh, mom, I'm not that small anymore. This is the biggest one they had at the store.
All right, let me, like, color him purple a little bit. I forgot that was a detail.
Wow.
Oh, my lord.
The one we drew is, like, nowhere near as jacked.
That's his body goals. All right, I think that's it. We did Yu-Gi-Oh! No justice.
We did it. We did Yu-Gi-Oh! Perfectly. No one could be mad at what we've drawn.
I know nothing about Yu-Gi-Oh! But I feel very informed and educated now. If you liked this video, then you should go watch our Dark Souls video.
Oh, yeah.
With Nathan and Julie. It's like the same concept, but what would you call it?
You know, it's on a different channel.
I just realized this guy kind of looks like Spyro.
You drew Jacked Spyro.
Thank you for watching. Go watch Druffy, and that's it for right now.
Bye.
So if you're new here, hi. I've done this before. Last year, I made a video about my first ever Pokemon Nuzlocke, and the game I played in it was Pokemon Ruby. It was fun, so here I am again, doing another. But this time, I attempted to Nuzlocke Pokemon Platinum. I'll explain again super quickly how a Nuzlocke works. You can only catch the first Pokemon you run into per route. If a Pokemon faints, it dies, and you can't use it anymore. And you have to nickname your Pokemon so you grow more attached to them. If you still don't understand, that's not my problem. Let's get started. Hoo boy. This was my Pokemon Platinum Nuzlocke. Pokemon! So my friend and neighbor Barry is practically dragging me all over the place with his hyperactive squirrel brain, frantically trying to get a Pokemon as soon as possible from this Professor Rowan he saw on TV. He drags me out to Route 201 and is about to leap into the tall grass when... Hold it! You guys know going into the tall grass is practically a death wish, right? What you're doing is basically suicide. Borderline insanity. What absolute moronic lunatics you are. Have you no respect for your lives? Do you have any Pokemon? No. Do you want some? And like that, I have a Turtwig. I named him Turt and immediately used him to bash in Barry's Chimchar. I was making my way through the routes, but right as I was about to nab the Shinx I found on 202.
Don't kill it.
Nope! So no Shinx for us. But that's all right. Shinx isn't that great this early anyway. Then I locked eyes with our first trainer. The first battle. Let's see how we fare against youngster Tristan and his level 5 Starly.
Oh my god!
So in the first trainer battle I ever fought, I almost immediately lose my starter to a critical hit. Why do I suddenly have a very bad feeling about this? Nevertheless, we kept going onward through Jubilife City, where we caught Kronk the Zubat in the cave above Route 204, and Magikarp on 218. Hi, Magikarp. Your name is Puppy. Just outside the city, Barry runs up and demands another battle, so I happily bash in his Chimchar again. And his Starly too. I kept on my way, eventually arriving in Orberg City, and nervously challenged Rourke. I was terrified of his Kranidos, but Turt landed a crit Razor Leaf and one-shot it before it could even do anything. So that's badge number one for us. I made it to Floroma Town and was really excited, because if you didn't know, outside the Valley Woodworks, you can find Shellos. And if you didn't know, again... I love Shellos. I ran straight to the grass to get my Shellos encounter, and... I'm not gonna pass up an encounter, so I very depressingly caught the Shinx and named it Failure to vent my sadness and frustration over not getting a slug. While there, we found Team Galactic messing around, stealing electricity, and this little girl's dad. So I beat up the grunt guarding the door, broke in, beat up the grunts in the building until Turt evolved, then found Galactic Commander Mars at the end of the corridor, who I was scared of because she's got a fat cat that hits like a semi-truck. But I had a plan. Back in the Orberg Mines, I caught Dwayne the Onyx, and I brought him to the fight because in case things got dicey, I would switch him in to buy time and heal up my other Pokemon. Basically, Dwayne was death fodder. Turt took out Mars' Zubat, and when Perugly came out, Kronk plucked off the Oranberry it was holding. But she got hit pretty hard in the process, and since Turt needed a bit of healing before he could get back into it...
Dwayne can take a scratch. Look at that. Dwayne is fine. He's fine, guys. Don't pull the sad nose for Dwayne. Dwayne's fine. Don't worry about him. Don't worry about him. Oh my god! Dude! Alright, I'll give him that. I'll give him that. Dwayne gets to live.
Somehow, when Dwayne was supposed to die, he hung in there on 1 HP. And you know what? I respected the hell out of him for it. I let Dwayne live, and Turt was able to take out the Perugly. What a legend. But then I put him back in the box and moved on. In Mount Coronet, I caught a Bronzor I named Big Boy, which I happily added to the team. And right before Gardenia's gym, Kronk evolved, which meant no mercy for those flower ladies. Badge number two. We slashed the guard bushes in front of the Galactic building and ran up all the stairs where we fought Galactic Commander Jupiter. Let's take a look at how that went.
Don't crit. Don't crit, don't crit. No! But, I mean, that won't do... Let's just hit it. Don't crit him. No? Oh my god!
We finally were able to beat her, but that fight really knocked the wind out of me. I was shaking on my way back to the Pokemon Center when this lady Cynthia shows up and is like, egg? Yeah. Anyway, even meeting Cynthia wasn't enough to calm my nerves, so to keep my mind off the absolute tragedy we narrowly avoided, I decided to start training up Big Boy on Cycling Road. And then he died.
I've practiced this game and...
So before you push up your anime glasses and tell me that steel is weak to fire, which I know, by the way, the reason I kept Big Boy in was because not only is his defense an iron wall, but he had heat proof, which negates his fire weakness. But then he got crit. So, first death. I'm sorry, Big Boy. You never had the opportunity to become a Big Boy. I walked into Wayward Cave and found a Gible. Gible is an amazing Pokemon. It turns into Garchomp, which is easily one of, if not the strongest Pokemon in the game that isn't a legendary. Adding it to the team would give us such a huge advantage, and now there is nothing in my way between that and... And we're moving on. We arrived in Heart Home City where I caught DeVito the Ralts, Kronk and Puppy Evolved. We had a clean win against Fantina, and some lady gave us an Eevee I named Milk. Things were starting to look better now. I was leveling up DeVito against trainers, and when fighting this lovey-dovey couple...
Let's go into Puppy. Get rid of the Buizel. Oh no! You're kidding. You're kidding.
And that's why I hate love. In came Shrimp the Scyther I caught on Route 210. Some good news, on Route 213, I finally found a Shellos. I named it Squoop, and I loved it. I loved it so much. I know you're not supposed to have a favorite child, but Squoop was my favorite child, and I wasn't apologetic about it. I trained it up, and now we got a Gastrodon. Turt ended up evolving too, so together with Kronk and Squoop, Maylene was defeated, and badge number 4 was secured. Outside of Pastoria City, I caught a Quagsire named Lol, but when I went to get my Great Marsh encounter, I was trying to get a Yanma and accidentally threw a ball at a Wooper, so now we've got Lol and Oops in the box. Then I swept Crasher Wake with Milk, who is now a Jolteon, with the TM Thunder I bought literally next door. I walked out of the gym and Team Galactic set off a bomb. I ran down the grunt who detonated it and took him out because he is weak. Cynthia appears again and tells me to bring a charm to her grandma, so I'm like, yes ma'am. We found her in Celestial Town along with Cyrus, the leader of Team Galactic, who starts some evil Shakespeare speech about how everything is imperfect so he's gotta blow up the world or something. I don't know, I wasn't really paying attention. And then he wanted to fight. Puppy took out his Sneasel and I sent out Milk to take care of his Golbat, but Milk decided he wanted to be lazy and not only miss all his thunders, but also punch himself in the face.
Milk! You can't be doing this.
Kronk came out and killed the Golbat because Milk was being difficult, but I gave him a second chance and he took out the Murkrow. Anyway, here's your dusty charm. I went out and caught a Magnemite named C, then arrived in Canalave City where we barged into Byron's gym and demolished his team with Squoop and Turt. Then Team Galactic sets off another bomb, this time at Lake Valor. So Barry, Professor Rowan's assistant Lucas, and I split up to check on the lakes. As I'm strolling past all the flopping Magikarp, I run into Galactic Commander Saturn, who we swept the floor with. After that, we headed over to Lake Verity where we did the exact same with Mars. There was a part where Turt got crit and almost died.
Oh god. Oh god.
But we're fine, he's fine. Finally, we had to go check up on Barry at Lake Acuity, and after trekking through 6 feet of snow for like a mile, we get there to find Barry at the top of a cliff like, ha ha ha, you can't climb rocks! Come back when you can climb rocks, loser! I'll go fight Candace's gym now, I guess. Now, we've been having some good type matchups with the past few gyms, so I haven't really been nervous about most of them, but Candace uses ice types, which like, half my team is weak against. Which, you know, nervousness rising. Not only was I at a massive type disadvantage, but the main threats on her team were her Abomasnow because it hits like a truck and sets up hail, and her Frostlass because it'll use the hail from the Abomasnow to heighten its evasiveness with Snowcloak, spam double teams, and then just sweep my team. I walked in, took a deep breath, which didn't make me feel better at all, and started the battle. Shrimp took out her Sneasel, and Squoop took out her Piloswine, almost dying in the process, and then she finally brought out the big bad Abomasnow. Since it's grass ice type, I taught Puppy Fire Blast. Yeah, I didn't know we could...
Anyway, I wasn't sure it could one-shot because Puppy's not a special attacker, and lo and behold, it didn't.
It didn't miss. Please kill it. Please. It's quad. What?
Eventually, Puppy took it out, but that was absolutely terrifying. Last but not least, Frostlass. I wanted to have Swoop rain dance to get rid of the hail so Frostlass's snow cloak isn't activated, but since Swoop was sitting at a not-so-chill 20 HP, that wasn't gonna work out super great. However, since I didn't want Kronk to be in this fight at all, right before the fight, I swapped her with Failure the Shinx. Yep. Sorry, little guy. Failure looked up at the looming death that was Frostlass in front of her, and as I healed up Swoop, Failure was killed in its blizzard. It's really unfortunate we had to resort to it, but I give Failure a salute for stepping up and surrendering its life to the team. Swoop came out, got off the rain dance, and after a close battle, was able to pull through. We won, but it wasn't without sacrifice. We had a moment of silence for Failure, the true MVP of the fight. Gone, but not forgotten. Now we could climb the rocks to Lake Acuity, and when we got up there, Barry's got snot dripping down his face, crying in the snow because he got beat up by Jupiter, who looks at me and is like, "See ya, I'm going to Veilstone HQ." I'm gonna go to Veilstone. We start running through the base trying to find Cyrus, but when fighting this scientist...
Psychic. Porygon 2 freaks me out. It is way too powerful, way too bulky, and it's way too weird. I do like Porygon 2, though. I would like a plush of Porygon 2. Very cute. What? 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 No! No! Swoop! We lost Swoop!
I wasn't okay. Turt came out and curb stomped the Porygon 2 out of vengeance, but to put it lightly, I wasn't taking that too well.
My heart is breaking. I'm like actually sad.
But life doesn't stop when your dog dies, so I had to keep trucking and brought Law the Quagsire to the team. With an intense, blood-curdling thirst for revenge, I stormed into Cyrus's room. Fight! Shrimp and Milk took out his team in no time. I snatched his Master Ball and used his teleport pad to enter the basement where Mess Spirit, Azelf, and Uxie are all being held captive. Fight! And like Cyrus, Saturn was swept too. After releasing the Lake Guardians, we head to Mount Cornet because Cyrus wants to go there and destroy the planet, I think. And we catch up to him at the Spear Pillar. Before we can run up and attack him, Mars and Jupiter step in. Then Barry arrives, honestly I have no idea how he found us all here, and is like, "I'll help!" Lol takes out both the Bronzers, Mars's Prugly, and Barry's Munchlax. So I thought, you know, it was all smooth sailing, right? Well...
Wow, Barry. Really doing a lot for the team, aren't ya? Oh my god, no, it has Giga Drain? No. No, oh no, oh no! It was a crit!
Not only did I not know their Golbat had Giga Drain for some reason, but it also got a crit! So I was starting to feel bad. But then I started panicking. The thing is, after you fight Mars and Jupiter, you have to go into the distortion world and fight Cyrus and Giratina. If Cynthia forces us into the distortion world without us being able to get a new member, we're in massive trouble. We finish up the battle and Cyrus starts his whole spiel about how the world is imperfect, blah blah blah, everything must die except for me. Then he gets swallowed up by Giratina, a hole opens, a rip in space leading to the distortion world, and I'm kinda just standing off to the side twiddling my thumbs like, "Cynthia, please don't shove me in there without my consent."
"Cynthia, can I go? I have something to do. Our world will be destroyed. Are you ready?" "No, I'm not! Let me go! I'm free! Holy crap. Get me out of here. Goodbye."
"I'm sorry, Lol. We just got you, and then you died. But luckily, remember when I accidentally caught that Wooper while trying to get a Yanma? It's time, Oops. You are no accident. You're our lucky star who will carry us to victory. We got Oops leveled up, came back to the spear pillar where Cynthia was just sitting there waiting for us, and hopped in. Everything is topsy-turvy and the Lake Guardians are telling me to push boulders into holes. And suddenly I'm on a floating crest of land with Cynthia, who's basically like, Cyrus, get lost and never come back. And Cyrus didn't like that. So he came at me. Oops took out his Houndoom and his Gyarados came out, so I switched to Milk. But I was very terrified because Cyrus's Gyarados has Earthquake. So if Milk misses his thunder here, he dies. And Milk is notorious for missing his thunders. But it hit. Milk lives another day. He also took out Cyrus's Crobat and Honchkrow, and Shrimp finished up his Weavile. Cyrus steps aside, and suddenly it's just me and the Angel of Darkness itself, Giratina. I threw the Master Ball, and like that, it was over. I saved the world. Now to get back to my gym badges. I arrived at Sunnyshore City and started making my way through Volkner's gym. I know he's the 8th gym leader, and he's supposed to be tough, and apparently he's depressed because everyone who challenges him isn't good enough and he's bored. But I wasn't concerned. We have Oops, and none of his Pokemon can do anything about it. It's not like they have Giga Drain or anything, right? They didn't, I checked. Oops was just Earthquake and everything, and at the end, I'll admit, I got a bit scared.
Okay, don't crit. If you crit Giga Impact, that would be really holy.
But it's all good. We're all good. And with that, off to Victory Road we went, where we caught ourselves a Gabite I named Flakes. Would have been nice to have one, I don't know, near the beginning of the game, say, in Wayward Cave, you know. But whatever. Better late than never. It's good to have just in case something goes horribly wrong out of nowhere.
Flakes is base 60. Yeah, it is. It's an amazing... Whoa! No! You're kidding.
Oh, dear. And that's the straw that broke the camel's back. After Puppy died, I stepped back and decided the team we go into the Elite Four with needs to be the best possible team we can build. The Elite Four here goes pretty hard, so I couldn't go in willy-nilly just hoping for the best. After literally a few hours of calculations and research, I settled on a team I thought would give us the highest possibility of winning. I added Flakes to the team in place of Puppy, and with a heavy heart, left Milk and Kronk behind as I brought See the Now Magnezone and Colgate the Togekiss I hatched from the egg Cynthia gave me. Even though I was sad to not bring Milk and Kronk into the final battles with us, they won't be forgotten. And it doesn't negate the fact they were such huge assets to the team, and I wouldn't have made it this far without them. I'll see you guys on the other side. I took a step towards the doors of no return, and immediately got interrupted by Barry, who wanted to have one last fight. Anyway... Welcome. This is the Elite Four. The battle starts and C takes out Aaron's Zeon Mega and Vespiquen. Oops takes out his Rapion and Colgate takes out his Scissor and Heracross. Next up is Bertha. Bertha loves ground types, but Turt and Oops had a smooth time smashing through her team. I felt a horrible shiver when her Rhyperior came out, but things went well. On to Flint. Flint has a pretty scary team, but luckily Oops and Flakes had no trouble plowing through them as well. And with that, we're on to the last member, Lucian. Now, Shrimp hasn't had much time to shine in these fights so far, so I decided I wanted to let her go all out. She set up sword stances and bullet punched everything. Proud of you, Shrimp. And suddenly, I'm at the entrance to the champion. The trainer who's been known to crush dreams in a single battle, and many still fear to this day. I took a deep breath. Things are going... surprisingly well, and I don't know how to feel about it. But I looked up,
And there she was. At this moment, I have only one last objective. Defeat Cynthia. She leads with Spiritomb, which has no weaknesses, so I send out Turt to hit it as hard as possible. Flakes takes out her Togekiss, and then her Garchomp comes out. This is known to be one of the toughest boss Pokemon in the entire franchise, and rightfully so. That thing was made by Satan himself, and I'm sure even he fears what he has created. I immediately switch to Oops, who's the only Pokemon that can lead us to victory here. I planned to put it to sleep with Yawn, and then Ice Beam it until it died. That was our only hope. But then, Oops was crit. And that was it. Nothing on my team can take a hit from this monster. And even if they could, they couldn't do much damage back. I sat there in disbelief, knowing there wasn't anything I could have done. And the battle is basically unwinnable now. I brought out Shrimp to bullet punch it so we could get in a little bit of damage, but she was killed. Colgate tried to chip away at it. He did some damage too, but was crit one shot. At this point, I'd accepted defeat. Only Turt, C, and Flakes were left. It's hopeless at this point. Flakes came out, and against all odds, Flakes outsped Cynthia's Garchomp and killed it. I didn't think he could do it. He was two levels weaker, and I just didn't think he could outspeed it. Suddenly, there was a chance. We could win this after all. Cynthia brings out her Milotic, which C took out with a few Thunderbolts. Flakes took out the Lucario with Dig. Look, my Earthquake TM is on Squoop, and we all know what happened there. Finally, her last Pokemon comes out. Roserade. Flakes went in for the Dragon Claw, and the battle was over. We won. As Cynthia is congratulating me, a sudden feeling of overwhelming guilt washes over my entire body, so intense it almost knocks me down. I don't think I deserve this. Something here isn't right. This wasn't meant for me. Back in the Distortion world when Giratina split me in two, how do I know I'm me? What happened in the other timeline where I saw glimpses of what happened parallel to this world, that was me too. Those things happened. Was that the ending I'm destined to have? The world I'm living in now is how I want things to be, but the other Jaden is equally me as I am her. Even if you might think I deserve this dimension, things don't work like that. Are there some things you can't escape, even when you try everything you can do to alter it? I don't know the answer. I may be able to sit on this throne now and thank all the Pokemon that put in everything to help me get here. All the hard work, blood, sacrifices we made. But I don't think I can ever accept this victory. I don't know what ending was meant for me. And I don't think I ever will.
Up one day with an itch to play Mario, but Mario is a fairly simple and easy game to play, and I can't have that. So I decided to see what would happen if I blindfolded myself and had someone verbally guide me through the game. I called up my most chaotic friend I have, Jacob of course. We plopped down in front of the original Super Mario Bros. And gave it a shot. Our first attempt wasn't that bad, all things considered.
So you know how 1-1 looks, so just kind of walk forward and jump over the Goomba coming up. You did? Oh my god. Okay, so now you're in the first two pipes. There's another Goomba coming up. Jump. Oh, hold strong jump. Big jump. There you go. Keep jumping. All right.
Sorry. No, that's your fault, actually. And this is where I get to learn I'm a chronic over-apologizer, but that's not relevant to Mario, so I'm just gonna sweep that one away for later. We kept trying for a bit, to various degrees of failure.
Jump. 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 Keep run, jump. Okay, that was on me.
Sorry. Actually, I'm going to stop saying sorry because it's not my fault.
Oh my god, these game overs are going to be so brutal if you keep going to the very okay.
And after dying the fifth time, we realized doing this challenge with this game was going to be next to impossible because after you lose all your lives, it restarts you to the beginning and you have to do everything all over again. Mario Bros. 3, a classic.
I like this one anyway.
Can we play as Luigi?
I don't think so.
What? But you're the controller. Make me pick Luigi.
Okay, press start. Press start again. Press right. Press A. All right, now you're Luigi.
Awesome.
Different game, yet same situation.
Run and jump again. Now, keep going. Okay, there's a piranha plant. No, don't jump.
Oh, sorry. I assumed that you assumed that I would get over the piranha plant.
I assumed. Okay. Jump. Jump. And again. Oh, you jumped. I was like so shocked you made it. I forgot to tell you to jump over the pit. Jump, 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 jump. There we go. Jump. Okay. Okay, let's be cool and calibrate because it's the furthest we've gotten.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's go. Let's go a little slower now because I think this is pretty easy.
Moving?
No, you're just not moving at all.
How's this?
Jump. So now we're dodging some piranha plants. Jump forward. Jump, jump, jump. Oh my god. Okay, keep jump forward. Jump forward. Jump forward. It's looking a little scary. Okay, big jump forward.
Run.
Yeah. Run forward. All right. Okay, will you just take, like, one step to the left for me? Okay, oh my god.
After getting a bit further and further with every few attempts, kind of a two steps forward, one step back situation, we managed to beat the first level in around 10 minutes.
Run, jump, big jump forward, but, like, instantly. And just keep holding forward, okay?
Like that?
Run forward. A little bit more. A little right. A little right? And hold jump. Yeah.
We did it.
We did.
That was so stressful.
Oh, imagine watching it.
It was a small achievement in the grand scheme of things, but it was the first shred of proof that we could at least build enough teamwork and communication to accomplish something together. And that's a big deal in this situation. We entered the second level and started chipping away at it when we realized this game also starts you over if you lose all your lives.
Oh.
What?
So,
Do we have to do it again?
Yeah.
Super Mario World, what an awesome game. The funny thing about using this game to do the challenge is it continues the tradition where I still have yet to play this game like a normal person. The first time ever touching it was the Kaizo Mario ROM I played a while back, and now I'm playing it blindfolded. I still, to this day, have no idea what this game actually looks like. So we started from scratch yet again, and we're trying to figure out a plan of action. We decided to only play up until the first castle because beating the whole game would have been genuinely awful for everyone involved, but since there's two ways to go, we had to figure out how we wanted to play the game.
So, do you want to try and clear this whole island or just make a beeline straight to the castle?
I just want to beat it.
Okay, then, yeah, let's go right. Are you kidding me?
Oh my god, I'm so sorry.
This video is not going to be easy.
And this is where I get exposed in front of millions of people. Okay, I'll admit it. I don't know my left and rights. Like, it's really bad.
So keep running to the left. That's the right. A little to the right. Hard left jump.
Oh.
Left, 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 left. I saw that.
I don't know how I never learned them. I think maybe I just faked knowing them as a child and got away with it somehow. And now I'm like this, finally reaping the consequences 20 years later. I've tried to use those tricks to help me remember. Like the one where they say, if you hold up your hands in an L shape, then the one that's a real L is left. L for left. And all that. But like, I do that, and in the moment, they both look like elves. So, anyway, Jacob is realizing now that he is partnered up with someone much more incompetent than he initially thought for this little gaming session. On to the left path we go.
Do a run, jump, and then stay still. Jump. Run. Run forward. Oh, wait, stop, stop, stop. A. Run, and then stop. Alright.
Huge.
Jump forward.
Okay, wait, still
no, now, yeah!
Sorry!
Okay, well, short-lived mushroom. Okay, walk forward. Okay, stay still. Jump forward. Okay, let's walk up a little bit. You can put some oomph in it. It's a slope. You're climbing up. Now chill. Oh, a little more. A little more. A lot more. Even more. Oh my god, just... I'll tell you when to stop. Now stop. Jump forward. Jump, oh wait, jump forward. Jump, oof. Jump forward, jump forward, jump forward. All right, jump forward, jump again. Okay, stay still. Jump to the right, and jump.
After a lot of struggling and still not beating the level, we decided we should just make a beeline straight to the castle for our own sakes. And that was a good idea because we beat that one on, like, our first try.
Time your jump. Now go. Keep run, jump. Just keep running. That's it. And you hit the bar.
Did I?
Yeah. That level felt like it was made for the blindfolded players.
Even though that little win felt good, our newly blossoming confidence was short-lived as Jacob realized what the next level was.
I didn't know if it automatically, I have to walk to it.
No. Oh my god, this is... Uh-oh.
This was a platforming level full of timed jumps, changing blocks, moving platforms, and a death pit over nearly every jump. It was truly the worst thing we experienced.
What kind of jump?
Medium. And jump again. Oh, walk a little bit. Jump right. Need a little more jump from that one. A little more. Now jump right. And jump right when I say go.
Oh, sorry.
It's fine for you to mess up, but let's not jump to the left.
Okay.
Out of panic.
I just feel like it'll undo my mistake.
No, no, it doesn't. Okay. No. Jump forward. Jump forward. Okay, so that's three tight jumps. You're not dead, though. Okay. What? Go to the left? You were just stranded.
After making absolutely zero progress, we decided to backtrack again, and play the optional level we tried in the first place, to the left, so we could flip the switch and make this level actually possible with a blindfold on. We were prepared to spend a lot of time on it again, like last time, but I guess after working as a team for like an hour at this point, we were starting to get the hang of it more. We were building more of a language for ourselves. We barely got to the checkpoint the first time we tried it, and then coming back to it, we beat it immediately.
Jump. Big jump. All right, perfect. That's where we died last time.
Oh, okay, cool.
Okay, so keep going to the right. Jump forward and mash jump again. Oh, you didn't jump. That's fine. Damage boost. Keep going right. Commit. I just got so scared.
Did we do it?
Yeah, we did.
Oh, yay.
The switch was hit, and back to the worst level ever we go. But this time, a tiny bit easier, because at least we don't fall to our deaths every jump anymore.
Jump. 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 Good. You're going to medium jump to the right, and then you're going to do a big jump when I say go.
Okay.
So medium jump. Perfect. Little left, little left. Jump. I never said right.
I didn't know.
Why would I? Why would you assume something at a
because
time like
sometimes
this?
Sometimes you say jump and I'm running right. And...
No. If I could paint you this. Actually, Jane, take off your blindfold. Just look at this freeze frame we have. Okay, you're at the mushroom block again.
Okay.
So just press your A and then walk forward.
What happened?
You got it. Medium jump right, and again on go. I have no idea what happened there. Okay. Okay, so go to the left and jump. Oh, no, you're just dead. Okay. That's fine. That's fine. He walks off the edge. No, he doesn't. Oh my god, run, jump forward. Jump forward. Jump forward. Okay, okay. Go. All right, perfect. Walk, again, too much is death, so walk a little forward to the right. A little more. That's too much.
What made the level really hard as a duo of helpless blindfolded person and guide dog was all the really tight and timed jumps. I don't know how big or far of a jump I need to do ever, so Jacob needs to try and explain every single one to me the best he can. And even understanding this is a tall jump with medium distance, I don't know how to do that. What's that mean? I just have to click the buttons and hope I clicked it the right amount. And if I don't, I hear the Mario death sound and Jacob sigh. Plus, a lot of the jumps had to be perfectly timed since the platforms move. That was like the worst part for us.
Big jump to the right. Big jump to the right. Okay, go. 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 All right.
I take a few milliseconds to process the action and input I need to make, do it, make it a third of the time, and then Mario slips off anyway because his shoe's got no grippies on him. We finally make it to the checkpoint, and it doesn't even feel good. It just gets worse. We've spent so much time on specifically this level, and only just now made it halfway. We keep trucking through. At this point, I think it's really starting to take a toll on Jacob.
Oh, I passionately dislike this level. This is the hardest possible level to be blindfolded on. Okay. Oh my god. You didn't have the momentum for it. Oh, this is so hard. Oh my god, Jaden, you do not understand how hard this situation is. Oh, this fucking level, Jaden. This is so hard.
We got to the end. We can do it again.
Okay, hard right.
Huh. I guess this isn't really, like, that big of a challenge for me. You're kind of the one who's having to do all the work here. Whoops. My bad. Sorry. Anyway.
Okay, now we're going to do a big jump to the right on go. Sorry. So, again, on go, you're going to do another big jump to the right.
Mm-hmm.
Go. We didn't make it.
Oh.
And I'll tell you when to go left.
Okay.
Tall jump.
Sorry.
Jump right. That one was unfortunate. Not even your fault. Stop. Big jump right. Same thing happened again.
Really?
Oh my god, yeah. I'm gonna start looking out for that.
This level was really putting our friendship and communication to the test. We had to take everything we thought we knew as individuals, throw it away, and rebuild it all together through verbal sign language. We started implementing different rules, like, if you're explaining what to prepare for a timed jump, lead with when I say go, instead of leading with the input. Because stuff like this would happen.
Big jump to the right when I say go?
Oh.
I understand the confusion.
And since we kept dying from Mario's slippery little slime shoes, we implemented that Jacob would say left, and I pull back on the jump, so we land perfectly.
Big jump to the right, and I'll tell you when to go left. Go. Left. Oh, this works perfectly.
We were becoming a stronger duo with every death. At least that's what it felt like to me. Jacob was still having to do all the hard stuff, so his morale wasn't quite there anymore. But after a full hour on this level...
Okay, so another run jump on the cycle on go. Here we go. One. Yeah, we're coming up on it. Go. Walk slowly to the right. I think that might be the end of the level, but I'm not entirely sure. I think it is. Keep going. Don't have a Goomba here or anything, please. That's the end.
Run.
Yes.
Yeah, we did it.
Oh, so many times I wanted to give up. But look at us now.
We passed the goal and it felt like our souls left our bodies with how relieved we were. Since we'd been recording for a consecutive 2 hours at that point, I asked Jacob if he wanted to take a break, and he said, "No, I just don't think it's possible." So we took a break, one consumed pizza later, and our energy was rejuvenated, and Jacob wanted to be friends with me again. Since the levels were supposed to get more and more difficult, even though we had a pizza, we were still a bit unsure on how long their whole run was gonna be. But honestly, it turned out to be not what we expected at all. The stage before the castle was a water level with a bunch of platforms and fish and spike balls, and even though I had to learn how to swim at first...
You can get out of the water, right? You just have to hold up or something? Just jump, mesh? I mean... Have you played this game before?
No. We found a star power-up, and as soon as I got that, we beat the level immediately.
Wow, that's the level. Wait, not yet. Go left. Blip more. Now go right. Okay. Hold right. There we go. Mario just looking at the pipe for a little bit.
The goal was touched after 3 minutes of attempts. Just like that, we were at the castle. I was optimistic because it was the last level in the run, but Jacob was not optimistic because he's played this game before and was worried about the boss fight. Which is reasonable. Also, I'd like to mention, when I was sifting through the footage to write the script, I saw this sprite of Mario looking up at the castle, and I was surprised for a moment because in the Kaizo hack, the sprite looked like this, and I didn't know that wasn't the original. I really need to play this game at some point.
Jump.
Right now?
Yeah. What? Forward?
I don't know.
You're gonna jump in place in a second? Now. I was a little off.
We were surprised to be getting through it so quickly, but it's ironic because the little cage wall climbing part surprisingly became the easiest part for us to maneuver, because when Jacob would say stop, Mario would stop immediately. So it was like instant feedback. It was almost like he was playing. Okay, maybe not really. Either way, we got to the checkpoint, and after that was an auto-scroller.
So now we have the auto-scroller section. Don't run. Careful. Now run. Jump to the right. Wait, actually, still jump. Ah, that was a fire flower there. Jump right. Okay, so jump and go right. Jump now.
We struggled a bit, but honestly got to the boss really easily.
Cecil? Run. Forward. Yeah. Oh my god, okay. We're at the boss door.
Oh.
Funny little moment. We were standing in front of the boss door, and I wanted to take a moment to mentally prepare and get ready for the last little stretch. So I took my blindfold off just in time to experience a jump scare.
Whoa! I didn't know they did that.
This is terrifying.
I didn't know they did that. That's so mean.
The way the boss fight works is you have to jump on Iggy's head to shove him into the lava while balancing on a teetering platform. And we were really scratching our heads because how is Jacob gonna give me specific directions to jump on him perfectly, consecutively, and in the right direction if I need to keep avoiding the guy's fireballs and the ledge in general? We decided to just wing it.
Jump, maybe? Maybe jump right. Ow. Okay, so this is gonna take some time. Spam, jump forward. Okay. You can still move forward a little bit. Get that mushroom. Alright, jump forward. Alright. Jump. Jump forward. Jump on. Fireball. Spam fireball. Jump. Okay. You did half of those things.
What? I definitely did. I did. Which one did I not do?
Jump.
Oh.
Hear two fireball sounds and then start spamming jump. There you go. Jump forward. Okay, that's fine. You got a mushroom. Jump to the left. Oh my god!
What, did we do it? What happened?
We did it, but we died before the game registered it, and so it didn't count. Huh, doesn't that sound familiar? As soul-crushing and slightly humorous as that is, at least we knew that it could be done with the right amount of luck. Which is another reason why I brought Jacob on board this project, because heaven knows I have nothing to bring to the table in that department.
Fireball, jump forward. Oh, perfect. Chill. Jump to the left now. Jump to the left. Oh, too far left. Oh my god, that didn't hit. Jump. Whoa. Jump. Okay. Left. And. Okay, so I think I got the strat now. Fireball, jump right. Okay, face left. And spam. Wait. Jump, now spam fireballs. Oh! That's it!
What, really?
Yeah!
How?
We got lucky.
Awesome! That was easy.
Yeah.
By some miracle, we tossed that weird turtle into the lava without even looking at him. Probably the most disrespectful thing I've ever done in a Mario game. We beat the whole first world of Super Mario World blindfolded. What a tremendous feat we were able to accomplish together, and all because of the power of friendship.
Did you have fun?
I had a great time playing my favorite video game.
Well, that's good. That's what matters.
Did you have fun? Yay! All done. Thank you.
You still want to do the rest of the game?
How many levels until the next castle?
No.
If you're watching this the day it was uploaded and everything has gone according to plan, that means I'm subathoning right now. And now that the video's over, you can come back to the stream. So you should do that now. Please come back.
Do you ever think to yourself, man, why is it so hard for me to just do the things I need to do and focus and remember things and manage my time and be organized and remember things and not get sidetracked? Ha! Yeah, me neither. When I was a kid, I was pretty much the picture-perfect depiction of a good student. I was well-organized, always turned in my work on time, got good grades. I even did my homework on Fridays instead of procrastinating until Sunday night. Sure, I didn't like studying and found it hard to focus during it, but who didn't? Seeing all those qualities put together, that doesn't sound like the brain of someone with any kind of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, does it? I was well-behaved, didn't feel like I struggled much in school, and didn't cause any trouble. That is, up until I moved out of my parents' house for the first time to go to college. Gradually, I started slipping. I began skipping classes a bit when I just didn't feel like going, would wait until the last moment to start classwork, and lost a lot of motivation because I wasn't interested in any of my schoolwork. But overall, even though it was pretty out of character for me, I chalked it all up to the fact I was simply over going to school. At the same time, my YouTube was really kicking off, and all I wanted to do was that. Of course I wasn't gonna be as good of a student when the silly YouTube videos were doing numbers. I finished a single year of college and convinced my parents to let me take a gap year to see where this YouTube thing can take me. Spoiler alert, the gap year turned into me never going back. I'm a college dropout. So great, I've eliminated the boring school part of my life that weighs me down. Now I can go back to being organized with my new exciting passion job, which entails being my own boss and having to manage and assign myself all of my own responsibilities 24/7. Why are the voices not getting quieter? It's almost like everything was going backwards. I was having a much harder time staying organized and focused. If I didn't want to do a certain type of work, I would have to shackle myself down in basically an isolation chamber to be able to get it done. If I found a new interest, it was all I could think about. And why is it so easy to suddenly be on your roof watching a YouTube video on how to know when you need new shingles? I really didn't get it. Child me had it held together more than current me. What went wrong? I could look back and recognize how everything used to be so perfect and easy. Look at tiny Jaden and all her ducks in that row. I used to color code every single binder I owned, and now I don't even know where I placed the 20 bucks I literally just had in my hand 3 minutes ago. I haven't even left the room. Genuinely, where could it fucking go? Despite feeling like I was downward spiraling for multiple years, I never suspected it could be something related to a genetic neurodevelopmental disorder. I just thought I wasn't trying hard enough and being lazy, or applying myself like I used to. Oh, the woes of turning into an adult, I suppose. Maybe the best years of your life truly are in high school. How upsetting. I didn't even enjoy those either. But then one day I got a text from my brother. I got diagnosed with ADHD. It was a pretty big surprise for me because growing up, he never really seemed to show any of the typical symptoms you associate with ADHD. You know, people would always describe ADHD to me as super hyper kids who would run around the room and scream and generally be a lot. That wasn't my brother. He was quiet and well behaved like I was. But when he started explaining his symptoms, the gears started turning. Yeah, I've always struggled a lot with focusing in school and having things hold my attention when it's boring. But like, I could hyperfixate on things I'm interested in and get really passionate about that stuff. Hearing him talk about his personal symptoms of ADHD made a lot of sense, and I felt very freshly educated on the topic. And you'd think that I would immediately start looking into getting a diagnosis for myself, because if you were paying attention, my brother's experiences all sounded very similar to the same struggles I've been having in my own life, but related to work instead of school, because I dropped out. But nope, I was just like, good for you, bro, happy for ya. Or, I'm sorry, I don't know. Anyway, back to struggling to simply open up my drawing program as if two blocks of iron were welded to my wrists. Imbalance of brain chemicals? Nah, this just happens from time to time. It's normal. Just the laziness kicking in. I hate Mondays, am I right? Even though I didn't instantly think there was a possibility of me also having ADHD, the mental seed was planted. It's genetic, so I knew subconsciously it ran in the bloodline. It took a few years after my brother was diagnosed for me to really sit down with myself and consider that I, too, could have ADHD. Shocking revelation, I know. Foreshadowing, where did you come from? Things in the focus and productivity department were just getting worse and worse. I had the attention span of a cartoon dog, would completely forget things as soon as they entered my head, would hyperfixate on random stuff like an addict, and there was constant civil war happening inside my head to get one thing done, even though I knew it would only take like 15 minutes. You don't understand. It feels like physical torture to make myself sit down and lip sync a simple scene, like most of the time. You know, the thing I've been doing for 10 years at this point and am definitely used to doing. And yeah, once I've gotten going, then I'm honed in and you have to pry me away from it with a crowbar. I'm aware of that part. But nah, I'm still gonna scrap with myself to plant my ass in that chair because I don't even know why at this point. The biggest thing holding me back from feeling like I had ADHD has always been the simple memory of being in school and having my shit together. I know what it feels like to be on top of things and to be organized. I had it all in the palm of my little child hand. I just needed to summon it again with a bit more effort. But a light switched off in my brain and suddenly I'm just not capable of the things I used to be, and it feels pathetic. Simple tasks are such a mental burden. It feels like I'm out of control but can't do anything about it. So finally, I figured I would try and get myself diagnosed. What did I have to lose? If anything, they just tell me, no, you don't have ADHD. Try a little harder and stop complaining. And yes, of course it took me like 8 months after deciding to get diagnosed to schedule the actual appointment. What did you expect? That's like the first checkmark box on the ADHD list. I started seeing a psychologist and he would ask the typical, do you have a hard time focusing? And I'd go, yeah, like this one time yesterday, and then he writes something down as I continue rambling on this hyper-specific example way too long for a neurotypical person. I met with him for a few weeks, and then it came down to diagnosis day. The nerves, man. I was so ready for him to say I'm a normal person who needs to suck it up. But instead, he was like, okay, so yeah, you definitely exhibit symptoms of someone with the inattentive type of ADHD. And autism. Yippee! My struggles are justified! I'm not crazy! Wait, what was that last part? He explained all the different ways ADHD affects me and the different areas I struggle with compared to others. He even gave me a 37-page document of his conclusions and information on how my brain works, with graphs and pictures. I've read through it all a bunch of times now, and it's already really helped me understand how I tick. I call them the autism docs, but I'm not gonna get into that side of the diagnosis. Let's just brush that one away for now. There's a couple types of ADHD you can have. Hyperactive, inattentive, and combined, which is both hyperactive and inattentive. Hyperactive is the type people typically go to when they think of a loud kid who can't sit still. People with this kind normally need to fidget, have low patience, tend to talk a lot, and have trouble staying seated, especially when they're expected to, like in a meeting or school. Inattentive is the one where someone experiences difficulty in focus, memory, organization, has a low attention span. That's the one I have. It's self-explanatory, but if you have the combined type of ADHD, then you got it all. ADHD jackpot right there, my friend. I brought up during the appointments that I used to be such a good kid in school with seemingly zero ADHD symptoms, and how that part has always confused me. And he had a couple hypotheses about it. One, since my mom has always been a big source of my organizational influence, I was able to depend and lean on her for the majority of my school life for it. I felt like I was naturally capable of staying on top of things because she was right behind me the whole time, reminding me and guiding me through stuff. So when I moved out, everything started crumbling, which lines up pretty perfectly to when I did start struggling. Another explanation he gave was the fact that ADHD affects women differently than men, which is also less researched. Love to hear that one. Not only do women tend to be able to mask their symptoms better than guys, so it goes much more unnoticed, but they also experience ADHD differently. And research says there's a chance it can just start affecting women later in life. I'm no ADHD scientist, though. That's just what I've been told by specialists. I don't know. I've just got the dang thing. Either way, those two explanations make a lot of sense to me and have since put my weird ADHD imposter syndrome to rest. I didn't really think that getting a diagnosis would change much about how I go about my life, but since getting my ADHD certificate and lollipop, it's completely revolutionized how I think and go about getting things done. It's still hard to get my ass into gear when I need to do one normal thing that's not difficult, but I'm much less hard on myself and will strike almost like these kinds of mental deals to loophole myself into getting things done. Like, for example, if I really don't want to edit a video, I'll say to myself, okay, I know it's gonna be super hard for me to immediately start that task, so I'll get myself into the mindset of getting things done by doing a simple other task I don't find difficult, like cleaning my room. That way, I'll feel productive and can transition that into tackling the original task much easier. It doesn't always work, but it's the mindset change and overall understanding that sometimes I'm gonna have to go about things in different ways that's helped me a lot. Also, after being diagnosed with ADHD. I didn't have much desire to get medicated. I figured just knowing I have it would be enough to get things into gear, and I didn't really need medication that badly. But the content creator in me also thought, well, if I'm gonna write a script about having ADHD, it would be nice to be able to talk about what it's like to be medicated, even just for a day. So I got prescribed good old classic instant release Adderall. Instant release means I don't have to take it every day. I can just take it when I need to get stuff done. It affects me immediately and then wears off after a few hours. There's also extended release, which is the kind you take every day and gives you a constant steady stream of medication. It wasn't until I had the Adderall in my hands when I realized the idea of taking it for the first time made me nervous. Like, what is this thing gonna do to me? I have so many friends with ADHD. Honestly, a higher ratio than friends without it. That's how it goes in content creation. All these MFs have it. They were all telling me that it's awesome, how you'll take it and immediately feel like a god, and you can do anything, and it's incredible. And yeah, that sounds great, but also like, what the hell? What do you mean I take this little pill and suddenly all of my problems seemingly disappear and I gain superpowers? That's scary. That sounds like the thing every adult in a 20-mile radius warned us about when we were kids. Am I gonna feel like a completely different person? I don't know if I'm ready to experience immortality. I put off taking Adderall for so long because I was irrationally scared of the tiny blue pill, but coincidentally, I really needed to get a script done. If I take too long to write a video script, then the team runs out of work to do, and then I have a bunch of people sitting around and waiting for me to give them more work so they can pay their bills and survive and stuff. But for the freaking life of me, I just could not get myself to sit down and write that script. My body and soul found it mentally easier to backflip off a bridge than write words on the computer. After literally 2 months of my brain going, "Ooh, you better write that script. I won't let you enjoy a single moment of your life if you aren't writing that script." I don't wanna. Get up, go to the bridge. After that constant loop, I finally swallowed my fears and took my first Adderall. I had talked to James a lot about what Adderall is like since he's been on it for a few years now. And after I took one, I was messaging him like, "I did it. I ate an Adderall. How long does it normally take to start? How do I know? What do I do?" And he was helping me a lot and giving me tips. Then, like 20 minutes later, I felt it. All the non-stop thoughts going on in my brain went silent. I could think clearly and in like a line. My mind wasn't racing a mile a minute. I was able to sit behind my laptop and write. It was incredible. I was messaging all my friends about it the entire time. I can write my script and not get distracted. I don't have to take a mental break every 10 minutes. I can remember things. Kelsey sent me a message and I thought, I'll check that in a bit. And I remembered to check in it a bit and respond. When I opened a new tab to look something up, I didn't go down a random unrelated rabbit hole. I picked up my phone to check something and didn't impulsively scroll Twitter for an hour. I can write words so easily. How am I doing this? What do you mean I can feel like this whenever I want if I just eat the tiny blue pill? I refuse to believe regular people can function like this on a day-to-day basis. No way. It wouldn't be fair. You guys don't have loud, non-stop voices in your heads preventing you from doing normal things? Come on, just admit it. You can't pick something up and immediately keep remembering what you were supposed to be doing with it. You always forget and feel crazy. Come on. Come on. I was so suspicious that on Adderall, either nothing would happen and I just wouldn't feel anything, or I would feel like I'm a totally different person experiencing some higher than life manic episode. But no, I just felt like myself, but with my shit together. And that's the part I couldn't believe. After 2 months of war, I finally was able to plant myself down and write my damn script. You wanna know what script I wrote while experiencing Adderall for the first time? This one. I was struggling to write a script about ADHD, and the thing that finally pulled it out of me was Adderall. You gotta admit that's funny. Yeah, it was great. I didn't think my head was loud before, or I was that impulsive, or had that hard of a time focusing. But now that I've been able to peacefully sit in one spot for hours and not need to take a break or check social media or get distracted by some stupid tangent I don't actually care about, yeah, this changes things. I still can't believe what I was able to accomplish. Writing a script in 3 hours. compared to my typical 12 hours, aka one mediocre thing with no struggle at all. And you want to know what I did right after I wrote this script? I immediately got up and cleaned the bird's room without rotting in bed for 3 hours beforehand. I just went from one task to another without thinking about it. All you neurotypical people must be thinking I'm literally pathetic and useless, but I know my ADHD brethren are out of their chairs right now hearing that. I'm not standing before you all to give you scientific data and information on ADHD or diagnose you or even promote prescribed drugs. I'm just here to talk about a big and recent experience in my life, how much of an impact and effect it's had on me, and how awesome feeling normal is. Seriously, being able to take a deep breath in mental silence is incredible. Cherish that feeling if you don't have a neurodevelopmental disorder. It took me 26 years to realize my woes were not actually woes, but symptoms of brain chemical deficiency. I'm writing this video, all things considered, pretty recently after being diagnosed, and I'm still trying to learn how to rebuild my life in a way that lets me optimize my productivity and get things done at a normal level. But so far, I've come so much further than I thought I could simply by knowing what's going on up there in the old noodle. And Adderall. If you're on the fence about being diagnosed with something, I get it. It's scary. It's scary to think you might have it, and it's also scary to think you might not have it. It's an odd place to be. But for me, having a concrete answer from a professional is what got me to finally stop feeling stuck in place and actually start moving forward again. It's been great. I'm excited to keep learning more things about how my mind works and find new ways to improve my day-to-day life. Cheers to getting normal shit done.
In case you missed it, I have new merch! For a limited time, you can get yourself a new and improved Ari plush and a completely new soft Ari jacket. I love both of these products, and up until June 23rd, they could be all yours! If you miss it, you'll never know how fluffy and pillowy the jacket is! Oh, it's like a cloud! Or how cuddly and friend-shaped the plush is! Plus, it's a great way to support both me and the team while we continue to make animations for you. Check them out at jadenanimations.com. Thanks for watching the video, and good luck simply existing to all my ADHD brethren out there. I'm right there with you. I believe one day you'll respond to that message in your inbox. Hang in there.
Hello everyone. So I have a different video plan for today. I think you'll like it and it's really special to me. As most of you know, I'm in college now. For one of my design classes, I have to create a project talking about my hero's journey. A hero's journey is a path that you go through in your life that tells you who you are and how you got there in 11 steps. Everyone has one. There's The Ordinary World, Call to Adventure, Refusal / Acceptance of the Call, Meeting a Mentor, Crossing the First Threshold, Road of Trials, Supreme Ordeal, Ultimate Boon, Refusal of the Return, Crossing the Return Threshold, and finally, Master of Two Worlds. Today, I'm going to talk to you about my personal hero's journey. It's kind of like a Draw My Life, but a bit more personal. My name is Jaden. I'm an average shy girl who grew up in an average family in average surroundings, but I'm happy with it all because I love everything about them. Average is okay, you don't always need to stick out. Ever since I was little, I've had a love for drawing and art, and I never really grew out of it. I drew all the time, and I'm still trying to improve and get better. One random day, I was somehow noticed by these two wonderful people known as Tiffany and Red. They run a popular YouTube channel called Aya's Cupquake, and for some reason, they liked my art. They approached me to make animations for them, and basically opened up a whole new world of opportunity for me. As ecstatic as I was, I had to weigh my options. On one hand, these internet famous celebrities had noticed my art out of hundreds of other people and wanted to work with me, but on the other, I basically had zero experience in animation whatsoever. I was like a helpless baby bird in the world of animating. I didn't know what to do. Did I want to go down such a path completely blind? Hell yeah. Tiffany and Red were unbelievably perfect. I've never met such amazing, supportive people. They helped me with learning the ways of YouTube and were always encouraging when I needed it most, especially since I had absolutely no clue what I was doing 90% of the time. They were really the exact thing I needed starting my own path with YouTube and animation. After a lot of hard work and figuring out how to actually animate, I came up with my first few animations, one for Aya's Cupquake, and one for my own channel. Yes, I had decided to use this amazing opportunity to start my own YouTube channel. I'd been a fan of YouTube for years, and it was a secret dream of mine to have my own channel and entertain people myself. I had no idea where it would take me, but it was something I knew I wanted to do with a dying passion. I just didn't know how to start. YouTube made me happy, and I wanted to be someone who could make others smile like so many others had done for me. The first videos were posted, and the feedback from everyone was unbelievable. I'd never experienced anything like it before in my entire life. You know the feeling of when someone gives you a really great compliment and you have warm fuzzies for the rest of the day? Amplify that feeling by a million. It motivated me to work even harder and get more animations out. I couldn't get enough of the feeling of making so many people smile, but at the same time, I was starting to lose interest in everything else in my life. I wasn't managing my time well with school, I didn't want to hang out with friends as much. It was all I wanted to do, and I started not caring about anything else outside of my little online world. Then the high demand for animations started stressing me out. So many people were asking, when's the next animation? And why don't you post more often? I felt like I was letting them down. My grades started dropping, nothing drastic, but I wasn't doing as well as I normally had. I had no other interests, and to make it even more complicated, I was leaving for college in the next few months. On top of it all, I started losing confidence in myself and who I was. I'm never one to be full of myself in the first place, but I started having no faith in almost anything I did, despite all the compliments and encouraging words people have been giving me. Everything started to build up, and I felt cornered. I didn't know how to handle things, and I started melting down slowly. I also didn't talk to anyone about how I was feeling, because they didn't really understand what I was in. This whole thing was new to everyone. After a long time of confusion and just being really messed up, a miracle finally helped me get out of my rut. That amazing 100,000 milestone. Something about seeing that huge number of people who supported me and enjoyed what I do changed my view on things. This whole YouTube thing is really happening, and it's what truly makes me happy. I can make it work. It's really my dream job. I began feeling better about everything, knowing that I had the love and support from so many of you amazing people. I'm starting to fall too much in love with YouTube and uploading content for everyone. It's funny because I don't really want to be in college, I just want to have YouTube be what I do full time. But I still need to think about the future. Will I still be able to make a living without a degree? How far can YouTube actually take me? There's so much I still need to consider, and it can be overwhelming at times. I don't know if I'll be able to continuously balance them both at the same time, and I'm gonna have to start making some serious decisions at some point in the future. Things will start coming together eventually. It's all just jumbled up at the moment. I'm gonna end up being happy no matter what, because things always have a way with working themselves out. I really am so blessed to be where I am. YouTube and all the support from you guys have shaped me to become better as an animator, artist, and person. I'm never gonna be able to show how thankful I am for that, because it doesn't happen to everyone. I just got lucky. I'm gonna find a perfect balance between everything one day. I'm gonna become confident in my skills and not be so hypocritical with myself. I want to be able to be comfortable with my art and not be so self-conscious, because I am still struggling with my confidence. Also, I want to make an impact on other people's lives, just like YouTube has done to mine. Everyone deserves to enjoy what they're doing, because life is too precious to live it being unhappy. Don't let opportunities pass you by. You need to take a leap of faith every once in a while. I hope you all enjoyed my little life/YouTube story. Maybe this will make you think about your own hero's journey and where it's taking you. It was really enjoyable reliving how I got to where I am, and to this day I still don't know why I'm here. I think about how lucky I am all the time, and I'd like to thank every single one of you. Also, say hello to my professor, because this is the exact project that I'm turning in, and he'll be grading this. Hello, Professor Haywood. Thank you for watching, everyone. Bye! I'm awkward. I try really hard not to be, and sometimes I feel like I'm getting better, but I'd say 70% of the time, my social skills are very below par. It's like my brain just randomly decides, hey, yeah, you see that person over there? Okay, so here's the plan.
You're gonna walk over there, everything's gonna be fine for like 2 minutes, and then you're gonna say something completely stupid, and then cringe about it for the next 4 years. Ready? Now go! I don't really have a point of this video. I kinda just wanna tell you guys a bunch of funny stories I look back and facepalm at, because I can get so socially awkward at times. It just happens randomly, and I never see it coming, which scares me. Like, everything's fine, and all of a sudden I'm hit with this wave of not knowing how to interact with people. Like, poosh! Okay, so this one time, I was at a tennis match with this one girl from another school, and we were walking over to the court to play, but it was kind of a long walk, and I didn't want it to be like this extended awkward silence and weird tension, so I decided to try and make a little bit of small talk. I'm absolute garbage at small talk, by the way, so if you ever meet me, you have to carry that job for the both of us, just a warning. So I kind of started a small conversation. So, are you in your senior year?
No, I'm in grade 10.
Oh, you're really tall for being in grade 10. She didn't really say much after that, so I automatically thought I somehow offended her by calling her tall or something like that. My brain was like, oh my god, Jaden, how could you call her tall? I can't believe you would offend her so badly. You have to say something to make it up right now, or else she'll be scarred for life because she's too tall. So I just blurted out, oh, but you're really pretty, too. Yep, I freaked her out. It was meant to be, like, a compliment or something, I don't know, but it came out really weird for some reason, and she probably thought I was, like, just a flustered lesbian or something. Not that being lesbian is a bad thing. And then it was an awkward silence for the rest of the walk anyway, which is exactly what I was trying to prevent in the first place. So, yeah, I didn't even stop that from happening. Another time, I was at the school dining hall with a bunch of friends, and they were talking about something I didn't really relate to, and I couldn't contribute much to the conversation, so I started just zoning out. You know when you start staring into space and just get lost in your thoughts? Yeah. So I was doing that for a while, and I snapped back to see this rando guy across the room, uncomfortably waving at me. Turns out, as I was completely lost in my own mind, I was deadbeat staring at this poor guy the whole time without even realizing it. I don't even know how long I was doing it for, apparently long enough for him to feel like he needed to wave at me. And it wasn't like a little friendly wave, it was a, oh my god, why is this chick glaring at me so intensely, I need to do something, wave. And I was like, crap. This is awkward, what do I even do? I can't just go over and explain, oh, I wasn't intentionally staring at you directly in the eyes for a socially unacceptable amount of time. In fact, I wasn't even staring at anything. I was blind in that period of time because I was lost in the depths of my subconscious. Don't worry. I couldn't do anything, so I kinda just, like, looked away and, like, stewed in embarrassment for the rest of the day. And then, there was this one incident where I was at this fancy restaurant. You already know this story is going downhill real fast. So I was at this restaurant and I had my order in my head. I always do that, the repeat what I'm gonna say in my head a million times so I don't mess it up when the waiter asks me trick. I just feel like if I take too long ordering, everyone's gonna automatically get annoyed at how I'm holding everything up, even though it literally doesn't take any time at all and no one cares. So the waiter got to me and I was freaking prepared.
Hello, miss. What can I get you today?
Hello. Can I just get the penne pasta with tomato sauce, please? That is literally word for word what I said. It was one of the simplest dishes on their crazy fancy menu compared to like the freaking mumbo jumbo like ginger glazed mahi mahi fancy fromage à blanc or golden confit escapolo bene femme bone appetit sauteed in ketchup ratatouille. But for some reason he was confused by my overly complicated order and asked,
oh, do you mean the four cheese pasta dish with sun-dried tomato sauce and basil?
No. Yes. Don't get me wrong, it was good, but frickin' I felt like I would have come off as rude for some reason to correct him, which is absolutely ridiculous, because he doesn't care what I eat, it doesn't affect him in his life, and by the way, how in the world did he get sun-dried pesto, five cheese, pasta, whatever, basil from penne with tomato sauce? I guess he knew what I wanted more than I did, apparently. Well, those were like three little stories I wanted to share with you guys, just because I thought they were funny and I think you'd enjoy them. They're all a bit too short to make separate whole videos out of, so yeah. Unfortunately, I have a bunch more little cringe-inducing stories like these, so if you want me to tell you more in the future, I don't know, like part two or something, just let me know, and yeah. If you enjoyed them, make sure you share them with your friends, or I don't know, share some of your own little stories in the comments and stuff. But anyway, thank you for listening to my little stories. Hopefully you enjoyed, and I'll see you later. Bye!
Oh, do you mean the four cheese pasta dish with sun-dried tomato sauce and basil? Oh, do you mean the four cheese pasta dish with sun-dried tomato sauce, basil, oregano, deep-fried with gluten-free spinach, sautéed with cranberry oil, with 19 different kinds of peppers, and filtered through the Kool-Aid man, and then leaves you right in the middle of dinner? With a side of alphabet noodles? I have no idea.
Hey, hey, just wanted to mention you can buy our new Jaden anime figure bundle on jadenanimations.com. Cool, thank you.
Game shows. People's favorite way to fantasize about how to win a lot of money and look really cool in front of the entire country. Everyone has sat down in front of a good old Deal or No Deal and watched the middle-aged white people pick the obvious wrong cases while Howie Mandel just smiles. And if you were on that show, you could do so much better because lucky case number 24 has never let you down. Well, today, I'm gonna live that fantasy and prove how easy it is to actually win money on game shows. With my friends Jordan and Kelsey, we're gonna simulate three of America's favorite game shows and see how much money we can collectively win. Let's see how hypothetically rich we could have gotten. The first game we tried was Family Feud. 90% of you guys know Family Feud, and I see you, but for the ones who don't, the show asks 100 random people survey questions, and you have to guess what their most common answers are to get points. I thought this was gonna be easy. Steve Harvey sets you up with a dirty question, you scream naked grandma, and then they give you money. But the moment this poser of a host walked out, I knew I was out of my element.
Oh, no. Ari Tofu's family?
Up against the Ari Tofu's. Let's play Family.
That's not Steve Harvey.
The game lets you build your family, and I was just gonna make me and my two birds, Ari and Tofu, and randomize the last two members. Looking back, I probably should have just made Jordan and Kelsey because they were right there. But somehow the game randomized to Walter White, so we just kind of went with it.
You can see them, like, the stretching.
Walter White!
That's Walter White! It's really him!
That's good.
Look,
that's
so good.
The prompt we were given first was, name a president whose face appears on money, to which we buzzed in Lincoln, and the opposing family, the Hortons, answered Roosevelt. And America must have been thinking the same thing I was, which was, wait, Roosevelt is on money? Because we got the higher score and got to keep guessing more answers. We very confidently punched in Washington, which was first, and then realized we didn't have any more guesses. Obama? After three strikes of wrong answers, the Hortons buzzed Hamilton. Which is stupid because Alexander Hamilton wasn't even a president to begin with. Everyone who experienced 2015 knows that.
Does that mean they steal all the points?
No. If Hamilton.
Alexander.
It's time for you to score some points.
If I know something, Hamilton is not a president.
Like the Graham Bell. Alexander Graham Bell.
They took all the points. BS. Name a president. Alexander Hamilton. Ding, 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 ding. Here's all the points. America is so dense and uneducated, they are literally pumping wrong answers into Family Feud, and I am suffering because of it. Name a fruit. Hot dog. Going into round two, we were down just a bit at 0 points to 96, but we swept the next prompt. Something that helps a baby go to sleep. Milk. Round 3 hit the fan again. Something you might lose as you get older. We were on a roll with hair, teeth, memory, hearing, and memory. We got a strike because I said parents, and even though that's literally 100% correct, guaranteed, it wasn't on there. There was one answer left we needed to figure out, and we came up with vision, which we were very confident in, but received another strike. Flabbergasted. How is hearing on there, but not vision? We threw out a half-assed walking, got our last strike, and it was given to the Hortons. Strangely enough, they ended up passing. Guess they couldn't think of anything. But you know what the answer was revealed to be? Eyesight. America is so lucky the Hortons passed on answering, because if they answered eyesight and took all our points again after we said vision, it would have started my villain arc. With a strong point lead of 224-96, we are now entering a double points round. What's something people alphabetize? Names. Soup. Four Americans thought they were being funny in the Family Feud surveys, and I am yet again suffering because of it. So the Hortons can play, but they end up passing again for some reason. That family only alphabetizes soup. We tried music, children, we ran out of ideas and just said soup again. Nothing was right. The answers ended up being address book, files, recipes, lists, and spices. Which spices, I beg to differ. There's no way the typical American has curry powder and garam masala in the front. They have salt, pepper, and garlic powder, and everything gets shoved in the back until they die. So now we were on the last round, which was fast money. They give you one last prompt with one answer, and if you guess it, you get the chance to actually win money. Name something that runs on gasoline besides a car. I buzz in with a strong bus, which was incorrect. I'm not wrong, though. I see you going to the comments. Google says a bus is a separate vehicle from trucks, cars, vans, lorries, etc. It is not any of them. That's what Google says. Lawn mower. Dude, whatever. All we proved was America is bogging down Family Feud with their stupid wrong answers. I don't want to win that dumb freedom money anyway. With $0 in our pocket, we moved on to The Price is Right. I've actually never watched this game show before, so I was learning as we went. Four lucky contestants from the audience are given a random item, and the closest one to guess the actual price of it, without going over, is selected to come up on stage and play more games to earn money. And I learned that even if I was one of the lucky four people selected, I wouldn't even get the chance to be on the actual show. The game gave me 6 chances to be the closest one to the price of the items, and I lost every single one. But hypothetically, even if I miraculously was the winner and taken on stage, I still would have won nothing. I tried twice for content and still ended up with $0. So we're entering our last game show of the day, and we've got a whopping $0 to our name after being on 2 of the most popular shows created. We really need to make this one count, because I am going to look like such an idiot if I was on 3 game shows and came back with zero money. We walk out on stage. The spotlight finds us. Jeff Foxworthy raises the microphone to his mouth and welcomes us to Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? The show where you're given trivia children up to grade 5 are taught. Answer them all correctly and we could be leaving the show with $1 million in our pockets. But fail and you're doomed to know you're not smarter than a literal child who has to raise their hand to go to the bathroom. That's Jeff's favorite line to drop when people lose. He says it all the time, it's like his go-to roast. Every couple of questions you have to pick a child they have provided to help you out. You're given the chance to either peek at their answer or copy their answer, but you can only do those once. They're like your child lifelines. I picked Jeremy as our first little buddy. I liked his enthusiasm, and he gave us a really good high five. The subject we chose was under fourth grade math, and the question was, how many lines of symmetry are found on the following shape? It showed us a picture of a pentagon. I accidentally thought it was a hexagon at first, which was not my finest moment. And then it glitched and never went away. We couldn't get the pentagon to disappear and literally couldn't read the multiple choice answers. Our thoughts were, since we wanted to punch in the answer of 1, yes, I know, another not the finest moment. Look, I was stressed, okay? The pentagon was freaking me out. I wanted to say 1. Surely they would have put the answers in ascending order, A being the smallest number, and D being the highest. So we locked in A, hoping it was 1.
Lock in.
Oh, man.
Locking in.
No, no!
Let's restart.
First of all, 7 was completely the opposite of what we were trying to say. Second of all, we wouldn't have been right in the first place. And third of all, Jeremy ended up saving our hides. So besides being able to either peek at or copy your student's answer, if you ever get something wrong but the kid gets it right, you get to be saved and are still in the game. Like the rest of the lifelines, it can only be applied once, and Jeremy was here to be our Pentagon-knowing hero. Anyway, we restarted. That attempt, we weren't counting that one because that was just a practice round, and the forever-lasting Pentagon wasn't fair. It messed with our heads. But this one's for real now. Attempt 2 started and was going well. We ended up getting to the 6th question without any problems. But of course, as our luck would have it, we were given another glitch question where they gave us an image, and then we can't read the answers. This time, the question was from 4th grade social studies. What is the shape of the following landmark? And then it showed us this. I didn't know what it was called, but Kelsey was sure it was the obelisk, and we could barely see that as answer C. Even though we were 99% sure we should just lock in C, I wanted to play it safe and copy our chosen student Alicia's answer, so we copied her, and Jeff Foxworthy revealed the correct answer, which was C, obelisk. Jordan, Kelsey, and I all celebrated because we were right, but in a very unfortunate turn of events, it was revealed that Alicia punched her answer in as B, pyramid. What, you little, oh my god. Attempt 3. We really wanted to do one attempt each with the game shows because on national TV you've only got one shot to make your money, but I don't think there's ever been times on Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader where Jeff Foxworthy tapes the obelisk to your face and makes you guess on while you're locking in. This time, I'll say it now, we didn't get any questions where the pictures perpetually blocked the answers. It was all a fair fight, and whatever we win on this try is what we're going with. And it was going well. Really well, in fact. Third grade animal science. Which of the following animals has 8 arms? Ha! Octopus. I knew that one. Third grade music. A symbol that represents the duration and pitch is also known as what? Musical note. Then we got stuck on fifth grade measurements. 9 meters is how many yards? I don't know that. I am an unfortunate slave to the imperial system. So we decided to copy Juliet's answer, which was 9.8. She was right. We got to move on, even passing the $25,000 benchmark question. That means if we end up flunking out from this point on, we still get to leave with 25K. Solid, but we're going for that million. By the way, I had no idea you could win that much money on this show. They could ask you, what's this? And then you say the color wheel, and then you can walk out with $300,000. That's absolutely bonkers. Anyway, we were getting far. Really far. 50,000, 100,000, 175,000, 300,000. We were still in it. The $500,000 question arrived. Fourth grade inventors. Which inventor's improvements to the steam engine were instrumental in starting the Industrial Revolution? We didn't know. None of the choices seemed right, as in, we didn't know who any of them were besides Benjamin Franklin, and I don't think he did that. After a lot of back and forth, we decided to guess on Robert Fulton, which was the wrong answer. We were out. But then we realized we still had hope. We hadn't been saved yet. If the student we chose during this round got it right, we can still keep going. Jordan, Kelsey, and I looked to our side to realize Alicia. The girl who thought this was a pyramid. We're doomed. We had no more child lifelines left. Where was Jeremy when we needed him? She reveals her answer. James Watt. She was right! We were saved! You were just saved by someone who needs to raise their hand to go to the bath. Jeff, we made it. We got to the $1 million question. Apparently, they tell you what the subject is gonna be, and if you don't want to take it, you can still walk away with $500,000, which is very generous. But the catch is, it's not multiple choice. You have to submit your answer yourself. Which, being real, if I was really on this show, I would just be like, all right, cool, see ya, and settle on the $500,000. Are you kidding me? That's $500,000. I've proven enough here. I'm going home now. But for the sake of the video, we went all in. The subject was earth science. And the question was, what do you call the process of heating water into steam and then cooling it to purify it? To which I was like, I don't know. But miraculously, Jordan knew it.
I might know this.
Fucking,
Oh my god, I don't know this.
That's distillation.
Is it?
Good job, babe.
Yeah, right?
How do you spell that?
D-I-S-T.
Isn't that what you do to alcohol?
Yeah, I-L-L. Distill. I'm pretty sure.
It's a better word than I would have said.
I would have said, Jeff, I don't know.
Locking
in? I hope so. I hope,
I hope they're not like, right. Actually, it's distillation.
Here's the correct word. Condensation.
Now locked in for the final time.
Oh my god, fingers crossed.
Is on the line.
Everyone in the audience crossed their arms
for getting
at the same
to the end
time.
Of the line.
They're
it's
pissed.
Not easy. You will lose $475,000 and walk out of here.
$25,000 is still a juicy amount.
It's a good amount.
Like, I'd still be happy. Like, very happy.
Me too.
No, I'm sorry.
No?
What?
What is it?
I can't believe what a moron I am.
You're
this
not is
a
my moron. Bad.
Show us the what? Correct answer, please.
I swear to God.
We were right. No, 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 no. We won that million. I don't care what the game says. We won that $1 million fair and square. It's distillation, not distilling. Shut up, Jeff Foxworthy. Go back to making barbecue sauce. So let's see what we made. Family Feud? Nothing. Price is Right? Wouldn't have even made it on stage. Are you smarter than a fifth grader? Hypothetically, $1 million. I'm happy with that.
Thanks for watching. I wanted to mention again, we're selling a really cool Jaden anime bundle that includes a new figure, vinyl record with Japanese and English versions of our Rise Above song, Ari card, stickers. Go to JadenAnimations.com and follow our shop Twitter at Jaden Shop for updates and sneak peeks on what we're working on. All right, thanks for letting me shill. Bye bye. Virtual pet games have been around since when people figured out how to make games that weren't Pong. Tamagotchi, Nintendogs, Webkinz, RoboSapien, you name it. And it makes sense. Kids love pets and parents love not giving their children actual living, breathing animals that'll eventually die and send their child into a spiraling depression for at least 3 days. It's a win-win for everyone. In 2004, my parents gave me a Nintendo DS along with two games to go with it. Animal Crossing Wild World and Nintendogs. They already gave me a real dog at that point, but this was good for stopping me before I started trying to ask for another. Because boy, did I not take care of the first one. I actually still have the exact same save file as when I first got the game. This is Star, my first ever Nintendog. I don't know why I named her Star, especially since the shape on her stomach is a heart. Anyway, her stats are maxed out. She can walk longer than any of my other dogs. I was gonna show you, but then... I do not think that we just went on a walk. I haven't seen these dogs in 12 years, and she's the champion of agility training. At least she was, until I tried to do a contest like the good old days, made a fool of myself, and got my dog bullied by the judges. This is Scruffy, named after my childhood dog, who is very dead now. Oh, there's Scruffy. I know you haven't had a human interaction in like 6 years because you're dead, but give me some space, will ya? And the other dogs mean nothing to me. I also wanted to show off my peach cart toy. I loved this thing as a kid and thought it was super rare, which I actually think maybe isn't because I have two. Anyway, I'm not here to talk about Nintendogs. I'm here because I found a bunch of very strange virtual pet games that are not Nintendogs that I want to show you. First up, we've got Hamster's Life with a Z. And, I got these games from eBay and it looks like someone else's hamster is on here. Anyway, oh no, it's one of these games. So I was going through the selection of hamsters and I stumble onto this. The Cutie Hamster. This is quite possibly one of the ugliest hamsters I've ever seen in my entire life. The cute little icon compared to the actual hamster is astounding. I got worse. He looks like an elder, so I'm going to name him Grandpa. Oh, Grandpa wants to play a memory game. Oh no. So you can pet your hamster, feed it, clean the mass amounts of black mold growing in its cage. Hold it with your creepy hand. You can even take him out of the cage and hold it. Alright, I think I'm done for now. You can also give it toys to play with. Oh, he cages too small. So, you know, Hamster's Life with a Z was as to be expected. Sure, some of the execution was a bit unexpected.
but nothing out of the ordinary. Until, what do you say when you tone a wound, you see a cat, and your heart almost stops? What? I thought you just play little mini-games with your hamster and feed them seeds and stuff, but apparently they start learning English. You can talk to them, and they'll respond, but you can only say the options the game has provided. Ah, yes, the only phrases a human would ever need. Good evening, come on, and I'm sad. But sometimes the hamster will personally ask how to convey emotions. My friend went away. How should I express these feelings? What should I say when I only have one sunflower seed left? Guys, I taught my hamster how to be sad, and now I think he's depressed. But it's okay, because 42 hours in, Grandpa now has a cowboy hat.